request a delay.
Alison McGovern, Sir Chris Bryant and Darren Jones all saying there will be no U-turns. But now, of course, you've heard that there will be speaking to one of the leaders of Reform and, of course, taking your reaction to that. In other news.
Did Prince Andrew's Royal Protection Officers cover up what happened on Jeffrey Epstein's private island? I'm crime correspondent Andy Hughes with the exclusive.
How the measles outbreak could see unvaccinated pupils excluded from schools in parts of London. A report into actually what happens when your phone is stolen. And farewell to the actor who uttered one of the most immortal lines in the history of movies.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning. Smell! You know that gasoline smell? The whole hill smells like victory.
Farewell to Robert Duval, who's died aged 95. Those stories and more follow the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, Reform UK has described as a huge victory the government's decision to abandon plans to postpone 30 of May's local elections in England. The party started legal action to challenge the delay, and ministers rode back after receiving legal advice. Downing Street hoped the postponement would help deliver a planned reorganisation of local government. Reform's leader, Nigel Farage, says the U-turn is a win for democracy.
In some cases, this would have been the second year in a row that people who are paying their council tax would have been denied the chance to vote. So that's why we took them to the High Court. We were due there this Thursday. They've caved, they've collapsed.
And Reform's head of policy, Zia Youssef, will be speaking live with Nick Ferrari at breakfast in the next few minutes. Scotland Yard is looking into claims that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's protection team turned a blind eye to his visits to see Jeffrey Epstein. LBC has exclusively spoken to a former senior officer who's raised concerns that some information wasn't passed on to the Met Police. We've changed the officer's voice to protect their identity.
I certainly thought that a line was crossed to the point that we were concerned that information was being withheld from the police. They seemed more loyal to the royal family than to the Met, and that's wrong. The big question for me is what Andrew's protection team witnessed on Epstein Island.
There's no suggestion of any criminality by Andrew during his visits to Epstein Island. The former prince has always strongly denied any wrongdoing. President Trump says he will be indirectly involved in fresh talks between the United States and Iran. Iran has signalled that it is ready to consider compromises over its nuclear program if sanctions are lifted. The British and Canadian Prime Ministers have issued a joint statement saying the NATO alliance should be more European. Sir Keir Starmer and Mark Carney have re-stressed the need to increase defence spending. And tributes are being paid to the American actor Robert Duvall, who's died at the age of 95. Duvall, who's best known for starring in The Godfather, won an Oscar for his role in the Western Tender Mercies. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,473. It closed up 36 yesterday. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells, some rain in the southwest of England, a high of 8 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
When you switch the family's unlimited plans to Vodafone, you save. So while Nan's learning to voice note,
can you hear this? Is this on?
You're saving. While your daughter's setting a new high score on her favourite game.
Get in!
You're saving. While your son's video calling his crush for 3 hours.
I love you more.
You're saving. Save more when you switch your family's plans to Vodafone. With Vodafone together. Eligible plans from the 30th of October. Credit check and terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning to you, 3 minutes after seven on Tuesday, February the 17th. Another day, another U-turn, another set of humiliating headlines for the government. I'll be asking, can they actually get anything right? As democracy, I'm delighted to say, is restored the length and breadth of England. And we'll be hearing from one of the chiefs of Reform UK, the party that has effectively taken control of this issue, at least. In other news,
Exclusion is on the cards for unvaccinated pupils as measles is spreading across North London schools. I'm LBC's Shivani Sharma getting reaction from parents in Enfield.
California dreaming, an energy deal between our Ed Miliband and the Californian government. What does it actually mean for you? We'll give you more details. Plus, Matt Lucas, the comic and actor abused by pro-Gazan activist in an intimidating attack on the London Underground. Here's some footage.
You don't like that I'm married?
No, I have no comment about it, by the way.
With, Palestinians. You've got a problem with Palestinians, Matt?
No.
That is the reality for some people being Jewish in this country today. You're just targeted when you're trying to ride the tube or get on a bus. It's appalling, and we'll give you more details. And farewell to a true Hollywood great.
No more meetings, no more discussions, no more Salazzo tricks. You give them one message, I want Salazzo. Now it's all out war, we go to the
back. Some of the other families want to still
be Salazzo.
Hollywood want to hear this. This is business, not personal.
So many movies to pick from. That's all but Robert Duvall. Obviously from The Godfather. We'll have a full tribute later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Count them. 14. 14 U-turns now. From this supposedly forensically skilled barrister turned Prime Minister, who clearly couldn't see the legality or make that illegality of cancelling democracy. And cancelled for one reason. Don't buy any of this idea of cost savings or making people vote a couple of times in the number of years. Whatever that might be, the reality was they know they face a wipeout. And by the way, it's interesting, it wasn't really the Conservatives or the Liberal Democrats or any of the others, was it, that led the charge about this? It was one party, Reform UK. And there's probably going to be voter revenge, I would imagine, certainly on Labour and some of the other big parties. Also, do spare a thought for your local town halls. I know that's tough. The very idea of doing a thought for them. But they have now got the most almighty scramble. And it's cost, by the way, £63 million. Yet another blithely stupid decision. The illegality, I say again, from a supposedly skilled barrister. I'm asking, is there anything he can get right? Meanwhile, anyone in politics knows that you start to lose the support of senior ministers if you ask them to go out and defend the indefensible and then you pull the rug from beneath them. And here's just some of the people I challenged about this lack of democracy and lunacy of the decision.
The process we're undergoing is to reorganise local government so that we have unitary councils, where at the moment we have districts and counties. And the reason for that is that there's a lot of confusion about who does what.
We are reorganising local government. It will save money. We're putting £78 billion into local authorities because I think people want to make sure that the potholes get mended and that there's proper support for Nan when she needs to go into a care home. If we're going to be creating new local authorities, what does it make any sense to have a round of elections in areas which are where the people elected would only be in post for a single year? I think if you ask local people, they probably go,
Minister, local people have been calling me and saying they want to vote. Why are you frightened of democracy with local elections, Mr. Jones?
We're not frightened of democracy. Councils themselves were able to request a delay, a short delay to their elections if they're going through a reorganisation. And a number of councils have asked for that. This isn't the government imposing it on councils. Councils have asked for it.
Made to look idiots there by their Prime Minister, by their leader. Alison McGovern, Minister of State for Local Government. Sir Chris Bryant, Trade Minister. Darren Jones, Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister. All look now prize chumps. We'll be hearing from the Head of Policy at Reform UK, Zia Youssef, in just a moment. But let's go to an area where now democracy has been restored. Benji Hire, LBC's reporter, is in Crawley in West Sussex. Carry on, Crawley. Morning, Benji.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, millions of voters heading to the polls this May, the biggest set of elections since the 2024 general election. That includes, as you mentioned, votes in 30 English councils that will now go ahead. Listeners will recall that ministers had granted permission to push those elections until May 2027, including, critically, in five areas where elections had already, Nick, been postponed from last year. And among them is Crawley, West Sussex, where I am this morning, where local will be heading to the ballot box to pick their councillors on both the district and the county level, having not had the opportunity to do so for almost 5 years. So what do locals think about it? I spoke to some of them this morning.
I thought it was council because of the mayoral elections in Sussex.
So West Sussex is back on now.
When?
This May.
Really? That's a bit short notice for everyone, isn't it?
Confusing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It shouldn't have been cancelled in the first place.
Did you know that elections this May that were postponed are back on?
No.
Is it all a little bit confusing, the U-turns?
Yeah, probably.
Just further south of here, the constituency of Mid Sussex, the MP there is Alison Bennett of the Liberal Democrats.
The best phrase I can use is something my dad would say, which is that I'm having a total sense of humour failure about this. It's a total humiliation for the Labour Party. A couple of weeks ago, I was in Parliament when Steve Reid confirmed these elections weren't happening. He was, you know, very, very indignant and fairly rude about the whole thing. And now he's totally had to fall on his sword.
And go further south of Sussex, you hit Hampshire. George Madgwick, a Reform councillor there, he spoke to your colleague Tom Swarbrick last night.
It's probably the number one issue that I've heard, to be honest. People do want to vote. They want to have their voices
heard. The number one issue you've heard on the doorstep in Portsmouth is about the cancellation of 30 local elections.
In Hampshire, absolutely, yeah, because they're obviously cancelled the mayoral elections. They cancelled the Hampshire elections last year. And what people didn't want in Hampshire specifically was a delay again, because that means that some councillors would have been on the council for 7 years after a mandate of only four. It's wrong, Tom. It's wrong. And it's, you know, yes, it's costing money, but for once, it's being spent in the right place, in my opinion.
Hampshire's elections, by the way, were still on course to go ahead in May following the delay, even before the U-turn. But it is the cancellation, Nick, their U-turn, the chaos around it, which has earned the government condemnation from across the political spectrum. The Tories, the Greens with the Lib Dems, as we were hearing. Of course, Reform, which brought this legal challenge, the government deciding that it had to reverse course following legal advice. And that move has been welcomed by Nigel Farage. Farage calling for Steve Reid, the local government secretary, to resign, and the government has also agreed to pay Reform's legal costs worth tens of thousands of pounds, nowhere close to the more than £60 million which Labour will now have to make available to local authorities to run these elections. Lastly, Nick, just as a reminder, the initial delay, the government says, was to account for a major restructuring as part of a devolution plan. You heard the clip there of ministers speaking about it in months past. That is still happening. Here in West Sussex, there will be a transition to a new unitary authority by 2028. So everything will change within 2 years after these elections. Before that, though, organisers best recover from the whiplash that they are experiencing at the hands of this government and prepare for voters to take to the polls in a few months' time.
Benji Hire reporting from Crawley. Let's get straight to Zia Yusuf, who's head of policy for Reform UK. Thank you for coming, Mr. Yusuf. Well, you've restored the local elections. Any chance you can bring about a general election while you're at it? Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Look, we're very proud, we're very pleased, and I think all credit to Nigel Farage and Reform. Look, people often have a perception that what all politicians do is talk about things. This was hard action. Make no mistake, the reason why Keir Starmer's government have thrown in the towel and said, yes, fine, we will begrudgingly, kicking and screaming, allow over 4 million people to have their vote is because yesterday was the deadline by which point the government was supposed to have filed its defence to the judicial review court hearing, which is about to begin in 2 days' time. And there's nothing about this that was ever remotely acceptable. It was unprecedented in the history of this country for elections to be cancelled for millions of people, 2 years running. So everything you just heard there about reorganisation, one might be able to construct something of an argument for that 1 year. To do it twice never happened before without primary legislation, i.e. without MPs accountable to their electorates going and voting something through. And I also want to point out that the letter where they announced this, that they were throwing in the towel and conceding that the elections can go ahead, said that this was in light of, quote, new evidence. And they've preserved their privilege on that, meaning that they're not going to publish it. I think it's in the public interest for us all to see it. I think I know what that new legal advice, rather, was going to be. It was be that they were going to lose. It's a great day, I would say, for the country. Look, we don't have a written constitution in this country. There's a lot of things that people listening to this program might take for granted that they shouldn't. And look, clearly, the primary motivation was to stymie Reform's momentum. The Telegraph ran a seat-by-seat analysis that suggested, it is only a poll, but still suggested north of 80% of the seats that they were attempting to cancel would have gone to Reform. But look, no matter whom you will vote for in May, if you're in these areas, we're very pleased to have done our part to restore democracy.
Mr. Yusuf, the JR, the judicial review that you put together, what was it going to say later this week? What would your evidence have been?
Well, the crux of the argument is that the legislation that the that the government was going to try to use. The Local Government Act of 2020 was simply could not be used in this fashion. That's a statutory instrument. And we were going to make the point that there is simply no precedent, as we talked about, for this to happen 2 years in a row. So candidly, we were more confident and thought we had a real, and we've said this consistently, we had a real shot of winning in the areas where they were cancelling them twice. And you may remember the Electoral Commission, hardly renowned friends of Nigel Farage and Reform, of course, but all credit to them. They came out with, I think, an extraordinary statement saying, look, there is no, we see absolutely no reason for these elections to be cancelled at all, and they should go ahead. So that would have been the crux of our judicial review. And I want to say one last thing. You know, your characterization of Keir Starmer as a highly diligent barrister, I detected a hint of sarcasm in your voice. But isn't this the man, remember, who's always telling us how important it is that the rights of foreign nationals are upheld? You know, any number of appalling and abhorrent things, frankly, you know, including rapists from other countries, must, you know, their rights must be considered. They must be allowed to stay in this country at taxpayer expense, no matter what atrocities they commit. But when it comes to British people's rights, he's willing to trample them and, you know, take extraordinary action. And frankly, you know, he's already the most unpopular prime minister on record. The one thing, he is diligent, I would suppose. He is breaking records there. I'd suggest his approval ratings will tumble further.
Last minute or so together, Mr. Youssef. Is it correct the costs are in the region of around £100,000 the government must pay to you?
I don't have that figure off the top of my head. I do know our lawyers have worked incredibly hard on this. And if ever there was money to be spent, as your reporter, somebody on that segment just said,
yeah.
I think it's money well spent to hold this government to account.
And lastly, one newspaper, actually two newspapers, are saying that Nigel Farage will hand out some of the top jobs later today. Is that correct? And Robert Jenrick is going to be your Treasury spokesperson or shadow chancellor, whatever you want to call him?
He will be announcing some new members of the Shadow Cabinet. I'm not going to spoil it. You've only got a couple of hours to wait.
Zia Youssef, thank you for your time. You're head of policy at Reform UK, and we'll come over to you for your views now. I think the £100,000 figure is right. That's what the government have got to pay in costs, plus an additional £63 million to scramble through and get those elections done if you live in any of those areas. And I'll give you a list after the news, by the way, because we're a little bit late. And we'll pick up on your calls on that. Also after the news.
The rate of unemployment in the UK climbs again to 5.2%. Vacancies are down and wage growth is cooling. I'm Christian May from City AM, discussing this shortly with Nick.
7.16 now, LBC News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
Reform UK's head of policy has just told Nick the government should publish legal advice that prompted it to U-turn on its decision to cancel local elections in May. Scotland Yard is looking into claims that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's protection team turned a blind eye to his visits to see Jeffrey Epstein. And figures just released show the rate of unemployment in the UK rose slightly to 5.2% in the 3 months to December. LBC weather mostly dry with sunny spells, rain in the southwest of England, a high of 8 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M4 remains closed westbound between junctions 10 at the A329M and junction 11 at Reading. It was following an accident that happened earlier, and now the emergency repair works are taking place and there are lengthy queues on the approach and on the surrounding routes. Also busy on the A4 Colnbrook bypass both ways to Stanwell Moor Road because the traffic lights aren't working. Queues on the A12 southbound from junction 12 at Mount Nessing to the M25 junction, and that's following an accident. Only one Woolwich ferry is running because of a technical problem. On the underground, there are severe delays on the Piccadilly line to and from Acton Town to both Heathrow and Uxbridge, and then there are minor delays on the rest of the line.
This is LBC.
A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. Take a road trip with your family, get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, drop up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. A safe trip begins with
Think. Do the 4 trip checks before every long journey. National Highways.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345-6060-973. LBC.
Retimi likes Pension B's modern approach to pensions.
I think Pension B has brought pensions into the 21st century, firstly through the use of technology. Signing up to the app is super simple. Pension B makes me feel very confident about my finances and makes me feel like I have a plan when it comes to my retirement.
At Pension Bee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionbee.com and be pension confident. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Why are you abseiling down the front of your house, Ross? You have a staircase.
I like doing things the hard way, Albert.
Try something easier, Ross. Get cheaper off-peak energy. It's available at different times, like during the day or weekends. Just get a smart meter and choose a flexible scheme or tariff.
Ooh, I could batch cook some quiche.
Perfect. With a smart meter, getting cheaper energy is easier than you think.
Eligibility varies. Action required. Schemes and tariffs available to selected customers.
Psst. Hey, dogs. Yeah, I'm talking to you. If you're tired of dry, tasteless kibble or slop that plops out of a tin, you're going to want to hear this. Butternut Box makes only the freshest dog food with juicy meat and tender veg. It's the kind of food that makes dogs tongue out, running around the kitchen happy. Let's hope your human heard this too. Butternut Box. Fresh food. Happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
7:20, coming to your call, Simon. You'll be the first caller, as I said right at the top of the show. Another day, another set of gloomy headlines for number 10. It's most, not all, but most of the front pages. The Daily, let's mention the Daily Telegraph, because they did start their campaign for democracy some months ago when this decision came down. There we are, Starmer U-turns on cancelled elections. Daily Mail, Starmer forced to face wrath of voters. The Guardian, anger as PM abandons plans to delay May elections. And lastly, even the front page of The Eye, Farage forces elections U-turn, triggering next threat to Starmer leadership. They do appear ceaseless, don't they? It is on the front page of the LBC app as well. They get the line, or we get the line, Starmer warned councils face race against time. This is, of course, the £63 million that ridiculous decision is going to cost, and as they seek to reverse it. Let's take one other story at random from one of the websites, and it's the Independent website, of course. Farewell to the Godfather and Apocalypse Now star Robert Duvall. There he is in that very famous photograph from Apocalypse Now, where he's wearing, oh, he's shirtless and sitting down, getting ready to go surfing. We've got an appreciation of a great actor's career later in this hour. So the local authorities that are now mentioned are Adieu, Basildon, Blackburn, Cannock Chase, Cheltenham, Chorley, Exeter, Harlow, Hastings, Hindburn, Ipswich, Lincoln, Norwich, Peterborough, Preston, Redditch, Rugby, Stevenage, Tamworth, Thurrock, Welling, Hatfield, Worthing, Suffolk, West Sussex and East Sussex. Around 4.6 million people. The decision came at 2:30 yesterday afternoon. Just under 2 hours prior to that. This was Sir Keir Starmer speaking to Jeremy Vine on Radio 2.
And can we be sure you'll stick to your course now, after those U-turns?
Absolutely. I know exactly why I was elected in, with a five-year mandate to change this country for the better, and that's what I intend to do.
And less than 2 hours later, there was another screeching U-turn. Simon's in Stratford-upon-Avon. Your reaction, Simon. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Just wondering which clown is coming on at 7:50 this morning.
That would be the son of the former leader of the Labour Party, who's a decent bloke. That would be Stephen Kinnock.
Oh, well, I do hope you'll be a little bit tougher than you are from time to time with him. Let's be clear. Sometimes we had Chris Bryant on.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Well, yes, that might be the case, but I know, we have Chris Bryant on.
What do you want me to tell him? Give me a question.
I'd just like to know if any announcement they make this week is actually going to be held the week after or the month after or even the year after, because it is a complete clown.
And he'll say that we're bringing down NHS waiting lists and we've got the highest growth in the G7. That's what he'll say. I'm telling you now, Simon.
He can say that. I don't believe all of that. I don't believe. And the point about GDP in the G7, just ask yourself, is the GDP growth good enough?
No.
It's not whether we are better than anybody else.
Yep.
It is whether it is good enough.
Yep.
They are there to make our lives better, not just continue to the U-turn.
Lastly, how do the government, it is the 14th U-turn, how do you imagine they look to you and other voters now when they go to the local elections? Do you think there'll be such a thing as a punishment vote?
I thought we had the adults back in the room.
Don't think we have at all. Stephen Kinnock will be joining us later in the show. I will put those points to him. Simon, thank you, and we'll take more reaction on that in a moment. 7:23. Now, as you might have heard on the LBC News Bulletin, LBC's Spoken with the Metro London Police, who say they're looking into claims that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's close protection team willfully turned a blind eye when the former royal visited the paedophile Jeffrey Epstein on his private island. LBC's crime correspondent Andy Hughes has the exclusive and is in the studio with me now. Andy, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, so every single member of the royal family has a close protection team that follows them anywhere they go in the world. Now, these are highly trained specialist officers from the Met Police. It was the release of the Epstein files earlier this month that compelled a former protection officer to speak to me about the concerns he had in the role. He tells me that members of the Royal Protection Unit became too close to the royal family, including Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, and may have withheld crucial information about what they witnessed on Jeffrey Epstein's private island. The ex-prince visited the island, known to locals as Paedophile Island, on at least two occasions. On one occasion, in 2000, the prince and his security detail were flown into the island, and it was during this visit that the late Virginia Giuffre claimed that she met Andrew there as a 17-year-old. We're protecting the identity of the former protection officer who spoke to us, and his voice is played by an actor.
I certainly thought that a line was crossed to the point that we were concerned that information was being withheld from the police. They seemed more loyal to the royal family than to the Met, and that's wrong. The big question for me is what Andrew's protection team witnessed on Epstein Island. I'm not suggesting they witnessed any criminality from Andrew, but there was concern that certain members of the royal protection team willfully turned a blind eye to what was happening on the island.
This officer also told me that there was a culture of fear within the Royal Protection Team, and officers were terrified of reporting any behaviour of the royals because they would be kicked out of the unit. Now, this all speaks to a culture within the Royal Protection Unit. It was a very closed-off team, and other units within the Met used to say they were more royal than the royals. For example, some members started to dress and act like the royal family.
Some of them started to wear signet rings and talking and behaving more like members of the royal family than a police officer. They seemed to get lost in that life. The royalty unit were terrified of reporting any questionable behaviour from the royals. There were occasions in the past where an officer reported the behaviour of a royal, and next day they were removed from the unit and put back in uniform.
I put these allegations to the Met, and they told me that the force is not yet identified any wrongdoing by any protection officers. However, they are now making inquiries into these specific allegations and have urged any former officers with relevant information to come forward. Now, I've spoken to Spencer Coovan. He's a lawyer for nine of Epstein's victims. He says the Met is still being way too passive in its approach, and the force needs to call in all officers known to have worked with Andrew.
If the police were going to be doing their job correctly, they should be finding the protection officers that were assigned to Andrew and interviewing them. Much like here in the States, they have an obligation to tell the truth during an investigation. So instead of just asking people to step forward, why not go out and actually interview the people you know are there?
As well as this new assessment from the Met, Thames Valley Police said the force is reviewing allegations that Andrew shared confidential reports from his role as the UK's trade envoy with Epstein. Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has always denied any criminality.
The line that some of the officers decided to start acting like royals is extreme.
Yeah.
They're going around opening hospitals or
things like that. Yeah, exactly.
It's like the reverse of hostage syndrome, isn't it?
It is.
LBC's crime correspondent Andy Hughes with that exclusives report. Andy, thank you. 7:27 is the time. Lenny's in Ashford. Lenny, you've got the vote. What do you say about this? Another U-turn. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, I got two very important points to make. One, I think the first thing it shows that their home of democracy is not fit for purpose.
Mm-hmm.
The speaker and the dispatch box, it should never, ever got past that to start with.
And well, the speaker wouldn't have been involved in this decision, Lenny. The Prime Minister and his team don't need to run decisions past him.
Well, I understand that the dispatch box, it should be honourable and no lies spoken.
Well, that's, yes, that is true, yes.
Yeah, and for the Speaker of the House of Commons to allow lies to be spoken proves that he's not fit for purpose.
I don't know if, well, lies to be spoken, I mean, you're not allowed to lie, supposedly, because there's Hansard, there's a record of all matters political. Isn't it largely their interpretation of the truth, Lenny? Isn't that the reality?
Well, There's only one lot of truth, Nick. And it's just been proved that it was lies.
Was it lies? It was false evidence, I think. What's called a JR, a judicial review, is going to tell us later this week what they were seeking to do was illegal. I don't know whether it was lies. It was simply a bad policy, badly prosecuted, that should never have got off the ground. Lenny, thanks for getting involved. Always good to hear from you. Dave, so pleased democracy is being restored. This is on the emails and the texts. Why has no journalist proposed this government? They pay for this year's elections to go ahead, but only change over to the new local structures when that electoral term comes to its natural end. No extra elections to fund, plenty of time to prepare for the changes. Well, that's not what the people want, I think, Dave, and they are deserving of what they were actually promised all those years ago, I would argue. Andy in Portsmouth, Farage wins again, and Labour's answer is carry on as normal. Come off it. There's no spark, no authority, no momentum. It feels like everyone knows Starmer's on borrowed time. Why drag it out? If change is coming, just make it. We are speaking with the Labour Minister later in this hour. Also later in this hour, an appreciation of a true Hollywood great.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning. Smell! You know that gasoline smell? The whole hill smells like victory.
Farewell to Robert Duvall, it's of course from Apocalypse Now. He's died aged 95. They say that's the most famous line in movie history. I would say it's the second. Come on. Number one, we're going to need a bigger boat. That's got to be the best line, hasn't it? 7:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC News Time. Dominic Ellis.
Reform UK has urged the government to publish the legal advice that's prompted its 14th U-turn of Sir Keir Starmer's premiership. Ministers have abandoned plans to postpone local elections in 30 areas in England where local councils are due to be merged or scrapped. Scotland Yard is looking into claims that some protection officers assigned to Andrew Mountbatten Windsor turned a blind eye to his visits to see Jeffrey Epstein. LBC has spoken to a former senior protection officer who's raised concerns some may have withheld information from the Met Police. And official figures out this morning show the rate of unemployment in the UK rose slightly to 5.2% in the 3 months to December. Annual wage growth, excluding bonuses over the same period, fell to 4.2%, the lowest in 5 years. LBC weather mostly dry with sunny spells, rain in the southwest of England, a high of 8 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I would like to see a ban on social media for under 16s. Start there, and then if the technology develops and gets better, if the companies actually respond to it, then maybe you can allow some more teenagers to go on it. Where I think we'll end up with this is I think Keir Starmer will go hell for leather on it because his MPs are supportive of it, and it will end up turning into legislation that had the backing of the House of Commons, but not a Scooby-Doo of how to actually do it.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
On a windswept walk in Carmarthen, while someone tries to use your card details to hire a speedboat in Cannes, this is the moment you relax, knowing that Barclays advanced tech has helped to spot the fraud in under a second, and their expert team are on hand to close it down. So you can get back to being windswept. Ooh. Just one of the ways we're protecting our customers 24/7. Search Barclays Fraud Protection. Barclays. Make money work for you.
Fly into flip-flop mode. There's still time to get up to £500 off package holidays in EasyJet's Big Orange Sale. Or get flights from £28 one way. EasyJet. Get out there. Selected dates and flights. Limited availability. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
Okay, done. Move that. And... oh! New ways to invest.
Okay.
Foolproof guaranteed returns. Invest today.
All right, I think I will.
Way before you seal the deal, check if it's real and if a company's authorised by the FCA.
Oh, thanks.
Search FCA Firm Checker.
Radio turns miles into memories. From sing-alongs with the family, road tripping with your friends, or continuing that conversation right into work. In-car entertainment is getting better and better, allowing you to create more memories than ever before. So make sure your next car suits all your radio needs. Your car connects you to the places you want to go. Your radio connects you to each other and the things you love.
when you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:34, Jane, we're coming to you as the next caller. Look, as we're talking about government incompetence and the lack of democracy, and we're about to talk about unemployment, just as an interesting diversion for a minute or two, I suggested that We're Going to Need a Bigger Boat is the best movie line of all time, and it's after the sad death of Robert Duvall, of course, who muttered that immortal line from Apocalypse. Now, here you go, some of the other suggestions. You're only supposed to bloody blow the bloody doors off Anne and St. Albans. You can't handle the truth, suggests Jim. That's, of course, Jack Nicholson was that one. Mick in Sutton Coldfield. I am Spartacus. We'll end it there, but those are all great lines, and we'll appreciate Robert Duvall's career later in this hour. Into the world of finance. And as is often the case, some figures dropped earlier today, and we're going to hear from Christian Ray, editor-in-chief at City AM, what they are, and then the necessary interpretation. Christian, good morning.
Good morning to you, Nick. We are talking about unemployment again, because it's risen again. Now standing at 5.2%, continuing the rather grim recent trend. We know now that the labour market ended the year in pretty ropey health, and it's still spluttering at the start of the year. This is the latest data from the Office for National Statistics, shows the number of payrolled employees in the UK fell by about 121,000 in December last year compared to the same month in the previous year. And in the final quarter of the year, there was a drop of over 130,000 on the year, with about a 46,000 fall quarter on quarter. What do those numbers mean? Well, they mean in many, many, many cases, Nick, that somebody who did have a job no longer has a job, and that people looking for work are finding it harder and harder. The figures for January are not much better, and we know that businesses have been warning that precisely this would be what they were facing. Increased minimum wage costs, national insurance contributions gone up, business rates increases, energy costs and overheads. Concerns, of course, around the impact of the Employment Rights Act. Just yesterday, we were talking about the industry body for HR professionals, talking about how the Employment Rights Act on its own was going to have an effect on the labour market and on the economy that was, as they put it, at odds with the government's expectations. I can't believe anybody in government actually expected that that massive piece of regulation would increase employment, but it's certainly one of the contributory factors to the increase in unemployment.
Let's move on to your front page. Defence stocks go boom, shouts the front page of City AM. What's the story behind that?
Of all the sectors and businesses that appear most sensitive at the moment to just government rhetoric, it is the defence sector. And of course, behind prime ministerial speeches and behind defence company share prices, there's some very active and very serious conflicts and further threat of future conflict. But when the prime minister says, as he did yesterday, we need to go faster on increasing our defence spending, then some of the biggest defence companies in the world listed in the UK see their share prices pop. I almost wonder whether the prime minister flirts with increased defence expenditure quite as often as he does, because he knows it's going to drag the stock market up, and it's certainly a lot easier than actually finding the money. Anyway, that's for another day. What I can point out is that shares in Melrose were up by nearly 4%, Babcock up 3.5%, BAE Systems 3%, Rolls-Royce up 2%. Why? Because the Prime Minister said, we've got our ambition to increase defence spending to 3% of GDP by 2034, and some reports yesterday suggesting that they might bring forward that date. And even if they don't, the Prime Minister reiterating once again that we've got to be more on the front foot when it comes to defence investment and strategy. And whilst he's quite right about that, it's the case that a lot of those companies that are going to be involved in delivering that promises are in the UK. One thing I'd point out, Nick, I was just looking, I need to confirm this because I was looking before I came on air, that for all the talk in Westminster about the centrality of the defence sector to our economy, to jobs and to our security, I still think it's the case that the MP's parliamentary pension scheme rules out putting money into defence companies on ethical grounds.
Got time for one more. I'll tell you what grabbed my eye. Which motor company is going back to diesel?
Yes, there's life in the old dog yet. The owners of Vauxhall have resumed the sale of diesel cars in Britain. They had pivoted, as many of them had, far over to EVs, but they've taken about a £19 billion hit, the Vauxhall, because of that dramatic pivot, perhaps at a time when the infrastructure and the customer base weren't quite ready for it. So Vauxhall's owner Stellantis has confirmed it's bringing back some previously discontinued diesel models in Europe and will sell existing ones for a bit longer as they drive to try to increase their profits. And that includes in the UK. So Stellantis, which obviously also owns Peugeot and Fiat and Citroen, have cancelled the launch of a load of new electric vehicles. They're going to bring back some hybrid engines, and they said that this is about shifting back to the real world needs of drivers. So you can just think about that for a moment, the real world needs of drivers, perhaps not a full rush to electric vehicles quite just yet. They are far from the only auto giant realizing that they may have got a bit ahead of themselves and that internal combustion has a little way to run.
We've run out of time. Talk again same time tomorrow. Christian Mayer's editor-in-chief at City AM, 7:40. Why did I ever get into the world of Jaws? I'm now being corrected by one of my sons that I got. Why did I start? Sorry, the line is, you're going to need a bigger boat. I apologise to one of my sons. That's been classed a rookie error by him, by the way. And Ian in Hull tells us, why did I get into this? You're going to need a bigger boat. A posthumous Oscar should be given to Roy Scheider, who ad-libbed that line on set. Now, I'm not saying you did. That's what Ian says, all right? So don't go for me. Shall we move on from Jaws? I think we probably had. Jane in Camden has been hanging on the line. The local elections, shambles. Your reaction. Jane, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. How are you?
Well, chastened by my son, but I'm okay. Go ahead. I'm not going to do movie lines again. I'm puzzled they've got yet another one of this magnitude wrong, Jane. Are you?
A little bit. I mean, I'm not a Labour supporter by any stretch of the imagination, but what I do get increasingly frustrated with is different politicians pointing the finger and the Yabu politics. Mm. I think the point that we need to consider here is that, okay, you could argue that there was something maybe untoward going on with the cancellation of the local elections, but actually this was a choice by district county councils whether they wanted to go ahead with the elections or not. It wasn't a mandatory thing. It was something where it was optional. So actually, you know, the government, I guess you could, I'm just trying to look at it from all sides, but from their perspective, if they're trying to save millions of pounds, then, you know, this is an option that surely should have been put on the table. Now, the thing to remember with reform is that with Nigel Farage, there is obviously an advantage for him in terms of forcing the hand. So actually, he's not doing this great thing for the public. He's not helping us in any way. He's just trying to help himself. He's just basically trying to expedite.
Do you not think he's allowing people to vote? That he has helped restore democracy? Do you not think that is helping people?
There's an element of that you're allowing people to vote, but ultimately Nigel Farage is not going to do something unless it benefits Nigel Farage. So I think, you know, you've got to take it with that sort of pinch of salt as well. I mean, the other thing to point out is that the Liberal Democrats were apparently calling on Labour to scrap this idea of cancelling the elections. However, you know, there was councils of theirs, yes, you know, with their majority, where they had equally asked to cancel the elections, and yet when they were, there was a spokes lady that was on the radio LBC yesterday,
right,
and when the point was put to her, it was like, oh well, you know, they kind of had their reasons. It's this hypocrisy all the time. So I'm really concerned about, you know, what we're going to get in. I mean, currently, yes, Nick, it is a shambles. It is an absolute shambles.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Labour are not doing a good job of getting to grips. But do we honestly think that reform, and I'm sorry, I'm going off a topic here, but do we honestly think reform is going to do that? You know?
Who knows? Who knows? But all I would say is I really don't think anything could be more shambolic than the current mob. I just don't know. Jane, thank you. Be careful. What you wish for is your basic message, and we'll have more on that in a moment. We're a little bit behind the clock, and we must bid a fond and sad farewell to a true Hollywood legend.
No more meetings, no more discussions, no more Salazzo tricks. You give them one message, I want Salazzo. Now that's all out war, we go to the
Some of the other families won't sit still.
They had me Salazzo.
Your father would want to hear this. This is business, not personal.
They shot my father.
Even the shooting of your father was business, not personal, Sonny.
I'm putting the network news show under programming. Mr. Ruddy has had a mild heart attack and is not taking calls. In his absence, I'm making all network decisions, including one I've been wanting to make a long time. You're fired. I want you out of this building by noon.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning. Smell! You know that gasoline smell? The whole hill smells like victory.
Robert Duvall in action in The Godfather and Godfather Part 2. Network, a personal favourite movie of mine, that one. And, of course, Apocalypse Now. To Siobhan Sinnott, who's a film critic and has met and interviewed Robert Duvall. Well, that must have been quite an occasion. What was he like? How fulfilled an actor would you say he was, Siobhan? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. He was friendly, he was genial, he was inquisitive, he was enthusiastic. He was in Scotland for a movie called A Shot at Glory, where he turned out to be a massive fan of footballing greats like Jinky Johnson. So he produced and starred in A Shot at Glory. It's a football film about Scottish football that plays everything offside. He's a Scottish football manager, Gordon MacLeod, none more Scottish in names, and with a co-star that was Ali McCoist.
Ah,
as you've never seen him before, on the big screen, on time, right, and in a Celtic shirt.
Did he ever indicate which movie he thought was perhaps his best or his biggest challenge, Siobhan?
I think his own favourite was a miniseries called Lonesome Dove, where he played a Texas Ranger. This was certainly he won a Golden Globe for that. He got an Emmy for that. But, I mean, I think he also had a big soft spot for his film, the film that he directed as well as and starred in, The Apostle, which is story of a preacher man, a very complex preacher man.
He's like the greatest second lead Hollywood ever created in a way, isn't he?
Yes, he was known in Hollywood as the number one, number two. because he was so good at character acting, and it was so great to hear that line from Apocalypse Now, because, I mean, there is a supporting role, because he was on screen for just 11 minutes, but what an extraordinary 11 minutes, and he knew that Francis Ford Coppola only had one go for all those jets and the shell explosions, so he trained himself to walk through without flinching to announce how much he liked the smell of napalm in the morning. And it's all one take. He got it first time and nailed it. And that's what makes Robert Duvall an actor's actor. He gave detailed performances. He gave films flavour. He was never showy, actorly, pushy, camera milking, but it was utterly, utterly committed.
Siobhan, I have enjoyed our conversation. Thank you. Siobhan Sinnott is a film critic who met and interviewed Robert Duvall. Just a couple of sides. It was always interesting to read the obituary, particularly obituaries in the Daily Telegraph. Mr. Duvall was the son of a Navy captain who went on to be a Rear Admiral, but he had no interest. They thought his son would follow his father. He had absolutely no interest. He wanted to be an actor, so he moved up to New York, and as a penniless actor, jobbing actor, he slept on the sofa in a flat that was owned by Gene Hackman, and Dustin Hoffman was sleeping on the floor beside him. How did those three get on? Nah, they did all right. Robert Duvall has died, age 95. Coming up later in the show, we're on the trail of the phone snatchers.
The Met is now using its own e-bikes and drones to chase phone thieves. I'm LBC's Fraser Knight, finding out what really happens if you report you're stolen.
That's later in the show, later in this hour indeed, right after the news. Government Minister Stephen Kinnock, he's going to be announcing an initiative to help disabled people, but he'd also have to defend the assault on democracy. Stay tuned. 7:47, LBC News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
Reform UK has urged the government to publish the legal advice that's prompted it to abandon plans to postpone May's local elections in England. Scotland Yard says it's looking into claims that protection officers assigned to Andrew Mountbatten Windsor turned a blind eye to his visits to see Jeffrey Epstein. And official figures show the rate of unemployment in the UK rose slightly to 5.2% in the 3 months to December. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells, rain in the southwest of England, a high of 8 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the M4 westbound, where the motorway stays closed at junction 10 at the A329M. It's because of an accident that happened earlier and the emergency repair works are now taking place. On the M25, two problems. Firstly, on the western stretch, there were queues clockwise to junction 16 at the M40 after an accident. And then on the Essex stretch, there are clockwise queues because a car broke down earlier on the QE2 bridge. It's all open now, but it's still very slow back towards junction 30 at the A13. Great West Western Railway services aren't running between Windsor and Eton Central and Slough. A train has broken down. And on the underground, there are minor delays on the Metropolitan and Piccadilly lines.
This is LBC.
Ah, Benny's parents. Thanks for coming.
Hiya.
So, Benny has really blossomed this term.
You're telling me? He outgrew his bike. We sold it on eBay.
Oh, that's not quite what I meant.
It's free to sell on there.
Free to sell?
Easy too. Sold Benny's bike, your guitar, my jacket.
You sold my guitar?
Shall we talk about Benny?
When it's this easy to sell for free, you can't help but say when it's eBay. Things people love. T's and C's apply. Excludes vehicles.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
At TfO, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access. We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
The Philly cheese stack is back at McDonald's and it's still intensely cheesy. Imagine the cheesiest thing ever. Now cover it in cheese, add two beef patties, cheddar cheese sauce, crispy onions and even more cheese. The Philly cheese stack. Did we mention it's cheesy? Available until the 16th of March 2026 from 11 a.m. Fees apply to delivery orders. Price and participation may vary, subject to availability.
This year at Amazon, we're increasing the electric vehicles used for deliveries across Europe to over 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on projected delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU by end of 2026.
The Hillary sale ends soon. So get window wise and grab these amazing offers while you still can. Like up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, grab £50 off your electric blind order and conveniently control your blinds for less. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, the Hillary sale ends on the 9th of March. Conditions apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Oh, look at you, that's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison. And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done, you should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
9 minutes before 8 is the time. We'll come back to your views on democracy in a moment, but let's turn to a government initiative and a boost for adults with disabilities to help tackle the cost of living. Here with more details, Care Minister Stephen Kinnock joins me. Good to have you on, Minister. Get a few details on this, if we may. Good morning.
Yes, morning, Nick. Thanks very much for having me on. Yeah, really proud today to be announcing a 7% uplift. That's the biggest uplift in a decade for the minimum income guarantee for disabled people. So the system basically is, if you've got, for example, personal independent payments and universal credit, you do a financial plan with your local authority and they charge some of that to pay for the costs of your care. But there is a statutory requirement that you must always be left with a certain amount of money at the end of the week in your pocket to cover essential costs, food, heating, etc. But we are uplifting that minimum floor, that minimum income guarantee by 7% so that people with disabilities are going to have more money in their pockets. It's going to benefit about 150,000 people across the country. Also very pleased to be announcing today £723 million for the Disabled Facilities Grant, which enables people to adapt their homes if they're living with disabilities so they can have things like stair lifts, through lifts, bathroom adaptations to give them dignity and respect and independence living in their homes. So that's the package of reforms we're announcing today.
And for the individual, just lastly, what does it mean in cash terms, Minister?
So if you took, for example, a young man, 30 years old, who is disabled, isn't able to work, so is living with personal independence payments and universal credit, they currently would keep it depends a little bit on circumstances, but let's take a number of, say, £112 a week as the minimum income guarantee. With this uplift, we'll be taking it to £120 a week, translating into about £410 per year for that person. Now, some people also have, those with the greatest needs, have a disability premium. If that's included, then you're looking at potentially £500 per year additional in the pocket of that young man.
All right, we need to turn to other matters, Minister, and I have great admiration for you because of the work you do in the field of disability, and I know you feel it very personally, you work very hard, but...
Thank you.
It is another day of humiliation for your government. Which is the most embarrassing U-turn? Pub taxes, farmers, WASPI women, or local democracy, Minister?
Nick, this local government thing, you know, I mean...
It's a shambles.
I agree. I agree that when the legal advice changes, you've got to change your position. We pushed through reforms which were based on streamlining, making it more effective, making local government more transparent. Why do we need two chief executives in some areas? Why do we need two finance directors? It's just duplication and bureaucracy. We don't need it. So we've got to reform it. We pushed those reforms through. 30 local authorities came back to us and says, look, we're just really going to struggle to put these reforms through whilst also holding local elections. We listened to that. We said, okay, we're going to postpone in those 30 areas, including, by the way, I think five or six conservative areas. There were Lib Dems, there were Greens, etc., but the majority Labour councils, but nevertheless a mixture. And we of course would only put that through on the basis of legal advice, which said that we could do so. That legal advice has now changed. That is not ideal. I'm not going to stand here and pretend to you that it is. But we're a government that works with the rule of law.
But it was challenged from day one, Minister. It was challenged from day one. Why did the government wait until the very last moment to announce that they would actually change position and the elections would go ahead? How humiliating does that look? How can you tell my listeners they can believe anything your government says? This is the 14th U-turn, Minister.
Well, we had legal advice, which was on that basis we were able to push through these reforms. And that was what our focus is. It's about getting the best possible value for money for the British taxpayer at all times. And, you know, we want to act in their interest and ensure that you don't have unnecessary bureaucracy. I think most people in the country would support that. The legal advice changed because of the legal challenge that we received. And that we are where we are. We now have to move forward. We will continue with these reforms, and 2 to 3 years down the line, I think people will really see and feel the benefits of them.
But the country we have as a Prime Minister, a supposedly skilled barrister, whatever made him think he could change this? His judgment is shot through, isn't it, Minister? Whether it's WASPI women, pub taxes, farmers, local elections, he cannot get anything right. Is this policy you've just announced very welcome for disabled people? Will that be reversed tomorrow afternoon?
No.
How can you say that? How should my listeners believe that?
Well, I'm telling you, I'm standing here and telling you it won't be changed.
We're
bringing forward secondary legislation to increase the uplift very shortly. Look, I mean, if you take each of the examples where we've changed course, you mentioned farmers. Okay, a change was made on inheritance tax, but the fundamental principle that the people who are gaming the system and buying up vast swathes of land and weren't real farmers, they were just doing as a tax dodge, those people are now not going to benefit from that loophole. So the fundamental principle changes. Okay, you might change some of the detail along the way. Does that really constitute a U-turn? I'm not so sure. I think it constitutes a government that is listening, that is sticking to its principles,
it's not listening,
but changing some of the operational detail of what we're doing.
It's a government that's dithering. It seems to have no policy, and upon any challenge, it either backs down or tries to put through practices that are illegal.
Well, look, well, that's I accept.
When confronted by... Apart from WASPI women, the only people you haven't helped are WASPI women, having promised you would. When confronted by farmers or other people, you back down and you try and put policies in that are illegal. And I'm sorry to say that to you, because you work bloody hard in the field of disability, in which I have an interest, but it's a bloody shambles, Mr. Kinnock, and you're a good enough bloke to realise it. Come on.
I accept that things have to change, Nick. And we've had some very big changes in Number 10, which I'm sure you will have followed in recent days and weeks. It means now really getting back to core Labour values of building an economy that works for everyone, having an industrial strategy that really protects our steel industry, ramping up our engagement with the European Union to get that growth and to have proper relationships with partners and allies in this dangerous and turbulent world in which we live. That is what we're going to see with this government going forward over the coming weeks and months. Sometimes things change and you need to change.
Do you need to change leader?
No. Keir Starmer is absolutely the right man to take us forward. I think we've seen over recent years...
Two hours before the U-turn, he was telling a radio station there will be no more U-turns. Less than 2 hours later, there was another U-turn.
Look, just think about the carousel of chaos that we had with the Tories.
What do you call
chopping
this,
and
Mr.
changing. Nick, this is about government taking U-turning. Difficult decisions, and sometimes the conditions change. As I said to you on farmers, that I don't describe that as a U-turn. I describe that as changing the focus of a tax policy. But the principle of going after the people that need to be gone after is still absolutely there. And I think you'll see in each of these, okay, some of the operational detail may change. The position may change in terms of the detail. But the fundamental principles of what we are doing remain completely unchanged, and we stick to our guns.
Last minute, last question. We were promised a cleaner politics under Labour. Now we hear that a Labour minister is accused of paying a PR firm to smear journalists. I speak of Josh Simons. Should he step down from his role? And why do you need a smear unit and for a cleaner politics, Mr. Kinnock?
The first thing I'd say is I've got huge admiration for Gabriel Pogrund and Harry York, the two journalists. Yep. Journalists play a vital role in our democracy. It is absolutely right that you hold us as politicians to account, even though it might be sometimes a little bit uncomfortable for us. What can I say?
All right.
But listen, there's a cabinet office review going on this. They're going to establish the facts. There's also the independent regulator of public affairs and public relations companies looking at what APCO did. Let's establish the facts, and we will absolutely take the action.
But why have a smear unit, Mr. Kinnock?
Sorry, what's a smear unit?
The smear tactics. There's a unit set up to smear these. We were going to have cleaner politics under Labour.
Okay, I've got no idea what the smear unit is. I don't know.
Well,
what
they were the one. This is the idea that they were putting out smear stories about those journalists.
Oh, right. The Labour Together thing.
Yes.
Yeah, look, that's what has to be established. I mean, it's clearly completely unacceptable to be investigating the personal details of any particular journalist in order, as you say, to smear them. If that has happened, whoever is responsible for that must be held to account, and that is precisely what will happen. But you've got to, first of all, establish the facts.
Let's finish on a positive note. 150,000 working-age adults gets an extra, at least £400, adults with disabilities. Congratulations on that. Stephen Kinnock, thank you for your time. You're Care Minister, and it's 1 minute after 8. LBC News headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, local election staff are warning they face an uphill battle to be ready for voting in May following a government U-turn. Plans to delay polling day in 30 areas of England have been abandoned after ministers received new advice. Reform UK had sought legal action over the move and now want ministers to publish the guidance. Reform's head of policy, Zia Youssef, has told Nick he thinks he knows why that's unlikely.
a letter where they announced this, that they were throwing in the towel and conceding that the elections can go ahead, said that this was in light of, quote, new evidence. And they've preserved their privilege on that, meaning that they're not going to publish it. I think it's in the public interest for us all to see it. I think I know what that new legal advice, rather, was going to be. It was be that they were going to lose.
Care Minister Stephen Kinnock has just spoken with Nick. He's admitted it's not a good look for the government.
We're a government that works with the rule of law.
But it was challenged from day one, Minister. It was challenged from day one. Why did the government wait until the very last moment to announce that they would actually change position and the elections would go ahead? How humiliating does that look?
Well, we had legal advice, which was on that basis we were able to push through these reforms, and that was what our focus is.
Scotland Yard is looking into claims that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's protection team turned a blind eye to his visits to see Jeffrey Epstein. LBC has exclusively spoken to a former senior officer who's raised concerns that some information wasn't passed on to the Metropolitan Police. There is no suggestion of any criminality by Andrew during his visits to Epstein Island. The former prince has always strongly denied any wrongdoing. Official figures out this morning show the rate of unemployment in the UK rose slightly to 5.2% in the 3 months to December. Annual wage growth, excluding bonuses over the same period, fell to 4.2%, the lowest in 5 years. Ukrainian and Russian officials are due to meet in Geneva later to start a fresh round of peace talks. The Kremlin says discussions are likely to focus on land, which is considered the main sticking point. And weather warnings for snow and ice remain in force across parts of the UK as forecasters warn of icy roads and potential travel disruption. A yellow warning's in place for northern Scotland until 10 a.m. Large areas of England, Scotland and Northern Ireland fall under separate alerts for ice. In the city, the FTSE 100 has just reopened at 10,473 after closing up 36 points yesterday. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells, rain in the southwest of England, a high of 8 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, it's 5 minutes after eight on Tuesday, February the 17th. Coming up in this hour, we'll come back to our conversation. Democracy denied, but now, of course, those local elections are on. Roughly 4.6 million people affected, the length and breadth of England. An additional £63 million to find. In other news,
exclusion is on the cards for unvaccinated pupils as measles is spreading across North London schools. I'm LBC's Shivani Sharma getting reaction from parents in Enfield.
On the streets of London, on public transport, on the London Underground, comedian Matt Lucas, who happens to be Jewish, is harassed by a pro-Palestinian activist.
You don't know about America?
No, I have no comment about it, by the way.
Palestinians. You've got a problem with Palestinians here?
No.
His only crime is to be Jewish. We'll give you a full report on that. And that's what life is like for some Jewish people in this country now. In other news, we're out and about with the phone snatchers, or the police trying to track down the phone snatchers. We'll bring you a report on that later in the show. And California dreaming, a deal done between California and the United Kingdom over energy. Ed Miliband is over there. For the Californian, it's Gavin Newsom is his name, but here's President Trump.
How about this? Gavin Newsom, he's the governor of California.
Newsom.
He signed Newsom, I call him.
Newsom, I call him. But what are the deal? What does it mean to UK? What does it mean to your energy bills? We'll give you more details later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
As you heard on LBC yesterday afternoon and through the course
of the hours since the government has U-turned. This is the 14th U-turn. This is one about local democracy. Those elections will go ahead, and they've effectively been forced into it by Reform UK. It's worth noting the party that shouted the loudest, the Conservatives, moaned a little bit, but didn't actually take any direction, as did the Lib Dems. Reform, I'm sure, sniffing electoral triumph here, by the way, and that would be one of the prime reasons, as one of the callers, Jane, was pointing out in the first hour, decided to launch what's called a JR, or Judicial Review. And the government left it until the last minute for that U-turn. Indeed, as I've said earlier, less than 2 hours prior to that U-turn, the Prime Minister was assuring listeners on another radio station that there would be no more U-turns. Less than two hours later, yes, there was one. Now, I mentioned Reform. They spent around £100,000 for the legal advice. That means that around 4.6 million of you will get to vote in May. And in the first hours of the show, I spoke with the Party Reform's head of policy, Ziad Yusuf, who told me...
There's nothing about this that was ever remotely acceptable. It was unprecedented in the history of this country for elections to be cancelled for millions of people, 2 years running. So everything you just heard there about reorganisation, one might be able to construct something of an argument for that 1 year. To do it twice, never happened before without primary legislation, i.e. without MPs accountable to their electorates going and voting something through. And I also want to point out that the letter... where they announced this, that they were throwing in the towel and conceding that the elections can go ahead, said that this was in light of, quote, new evidence. And they've preserved their privilege on that, meaning that they're not going to publish it. I think it's in the public interest for us all to see it. I think I know what that new legal advice was going to be. It was be that they were going to lose. It's a great day, I would say, for the country. Look, we don't have a written constitution in this country. There's a lot of things that people listening to this programme might take for granted that they shouldn't. And look, clearly, the primary motivation was to stymie Reform's momentum. The Telegraph ran a seat-by-seat analysis that suggested, it is only a poll, but still suggested north of 80% of the seats that they were attempting to cancel would have gone to Reform. But look, no matter whom you will vote for in May, if you're in these areas, we're very pleased to have done our part to restore democracy.
It was the care minister who was chosen, Stephen Kinnock, to be put on the media round today, unfortunately forced to defend this latest U-turn. Here's a little of my exchange with him in the previous hour. His judgment is shot through, isn't it, Minister? Whether it's WASPI women, pub taxes, farmers, local elections, he cannot get anything right. Is this policy you've just announced very welcome for disabled people? Will that be reversed tomorrow afternoon?
No.
How can you say that? How should my listeners believe that?
Well, I'm telling you, I'm standing here and telling you it won't be changed.
We're
bringing forward secondary legislation to increase the uplift very shortly. Look, I mean, if you take each of the examples where we've changed course, you mentioned farmers, okay. A change was made on inheritance tax, but the fundamental principle that the people who were gaming the system and buying up vast swathes of land and weren't real farmers, they were just doing as a tax dodge, those people are now not going to benefit from that loophole. So the fundamental principle changes. Okay, you might change some of the detail along the way. Does that really constitute a U-turn? I'm not so sure. I think it constitutes a government that is listening, that is sticking to its principles,
it's not listening,
but changing some of the operational detail of what we're doing.
It's a government that's dithering. It seems to have no policy, and upon any challenge, it either backs down or tries to put through practices that are illegal.
Well, look, I accept...
Apart from WASPI women, the only people you haven't helped are WASPI women, having promised you would. When confronted by farmers or other people, you back down and you try and put policies in that are illegal. And I'm sorry to say that to you, because you work bloody hard in the field of disability, in which I have an interest, but it's a bloody shambles, Mr. Kinnock, and you're a good enough bloke to realise it. Come on.
I accept that things have to change, Nick, and we've had some very big changes in Number 10, which I'm sure you will have followed in recent days and weeks. It means now really getting back to core Labour values of building an economy that works for everyone, having an industrial strategy that really protects our steel industry, ramping up our engagement with the European Union to get that growth and to have proper relationships with partners and allies in this dangerous and turbulent world in which we live. That is what we're going to see with this government going forward over the coming weeks and months. Sometimes things change and you need to change.
Well, you need to change leader.
No, Keir Starmer is absolutely the right man to take us forward. I think we've seen over recent years.
Two hours before the U-turn, he was telling a radio station there will be no more U-turns. Less than 2 hours later, there was another U-turn.
Look. Just think about the carousel of chaos that we had with the Tories.
What do you call
chopping
this,
and changing. Nick, this is about government taking U-turning. Difficult decisions, and sometimes the conditions change. As I said to you on farmers, that I don't describe that as a U-turn. I describe that as changing the focus of a tax policy. But the principle of going after the people that need to be gone after is still absolutely there. And I think you'll see in each of these, okay, some of the operational detail may change. The position may change in terms of the detail. But the fundamental principles of what we are doing remain completely unchanged, and we stick to our gun.
Stephen Kinnock, Care Minister in the previous hour. Let's get to your voices. Pavan in Rugby. Pavan, how do you characterise it? He says it's listening to the electorate is what Mr Kinnock would tell us. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I'm afraid I have to agree with you. I mean, the deflection and attempt to introduce neologisms to try to explain that away. Credit to Mr Kinnock, by the way. I think he did a sterling effort.
He's a decent bloke and he works hard for disabled people, so he is to be admired, but not here. He's defending the indefensible, I think, Pavan.
Nick, the biggest problem, I think, is the fact that this chap has a legal background. I mean, I've got legal qualifications, and for a prime minister who was head of the DPP, amongst other things, to have, one, mentioned a sub judice case and told off by the Speaker of the House after PMQs last week, for somebody who doesn't seem to understand the nature of ITLOS and the non-binding regulations and determinants passed by the ICJ and everything else, for a prime minister who every single time he's called out is, people lied to me or I didn't know what was going on, and a lack of accountability. And now here, probably the worst of all, the suggestion that the legal advice change, and again, Mr. Kinnock said this, well, unless our constitution changed, Nick, and I don't recall that happening any time in the last 800-odd years in that regard, in what he's talking about, the idea that the legal advice change probably was on the basis of which they were trying to push it forward. Now, it's difficult to surmise too much without, everything being in the public domain, but the fact remains that this is the real sticking point here, Nick. Look how late they did this, and for those who don't know, have a look at how late the government interjected in the Epping judgment. They were right to do so, by the way, but that was also done within a week. Again, they must understand legal process. Again, a guy who's a qualified barrister who is telling us all sorts of wonderful things he did under the DPP must understand due process. If he doesn't, I'm afraid it's a little bit, untoward for him to turn around and say, well, we've got the first female chancellor or a cabinet which has gone to state school, because he can't seem to do his job. And if he can't do his job, Nick, neither can anybody else underneath him, because he's the man supposedly calling the shots.
Well, you can't argue with that. That was brilliant. I'm not surprised you've got a legal background. Brilliantly and cogently argued. Pavan, thank you. Do you agree? Do you disagree with Pavan? Do give me a call. Charles, you'll be the next caller on that. Also, as I've mentioned before, coming up later in the show, we're on the road with the police trying to stop those phone snatchers.
The Met is now using its own e-bikes and drones to chase phone thieves. I'm LBC's Fraser Knight, finding out what really happens if you report you're stolen.
It's 8:15 now, LBC News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
A government minister has told Nick that he still has confidence in the Prime Minister despite his latest U-turn on postponing local elections. Scotland Yard has told LBC that it's looking into claims that some of Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's protection team turned a blind eye to his visits to see Jeffrey Epstein. And official figures show the rate of unemployment in the UK rose slightly to 5.2% in the 3 months to December. LBC weather mostly dry with sunny spells, rain in the southwest of England, a high of 8 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M4 remains closed westbound between junctions 10 at the A329M and 11 at the A33 at the Basingstoke Road. There are severe delays on the approach and on the surrounding routes. It's especially busy on the A329M. Also, the delays continue on the western stretch of the M25 clockwise. It's slow at junction 16 at the M40. It's following an accident where one lane is closed for recovery. There's been an accident on the Hanger Lane gyratory, so there are delays on the A40 eastbound and also southbound on the North Circular Road. On the Underground, there are severe delays on the Bakerloo line and minor delays on the Piccadilly line.
This is LBC.
I need a smoke. Fancy one, Dave. Dave,
Why is lightning shooting out of your phone?
Introducing the free NHS Quit Smoking app. From craving support to a savings predictor, the power to quit is in your hands.
A smoke, you say? No thanks, Pete. I've saved £250 this month.
Fair play. Download the free NHS Quit Smoking app today.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
Idle money chills in your current account. Parked in front of the telly, wanting a snack, yet too lazy to move. But thanks to Monzo, busy money got up early, automatically split your paycheck into pots, rounded up your purchases into savings, invested your interest into ISAs. Oh, and has already written itself a to-do list for tomorrow. Monzo, the bank that gets your money moving. UK residents aged 18 plus, Monzo personal account required, capital at risk, T's and C's and fees may apply.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
19 after 8, let's stay with our conversation. Local democracy has been restored. Charles in Bagshot's been hanging on for some time. Charles, thank you. Your view on this. Good morning.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, it is an affront to democracy, but I would have been interesting to ask your previous reform guest, was that Mr. Yusuf, I think?
Azir Yusuf, yes, head of policy.
It would have been interesting to ask him his views on all of these ex-Tory MPs and sitting councillors that are jumping to reform with no by-election.
That's now, interesting. That's a good point.
The population's not the same, but surely every vote counts. You can't have some people having democracy, but not others.
No, that's good. That's a very good point. And next time I speak with a senior member of Reform, it is a point worth putting. Do you think it stinks, Charles?
Oh, it does. And look, I don't care if it's 6 months they're going to be in office or 1 year. People have a right to have their say. Yeah. Now, I hate Reform. I can't stand. They'll probably do really well, but...
Just out of interest, why? I mean, gosh, that is a strong word. Why do you hate Reform?
I just their politics. To be honest, I agree with
you. Say, I mean, a lot of people say they're very divisive.
Okay. I don't like. Yeah.
Okay.
It just stinks because, I mean, even our local, I said our local Liberal Democrat MP, which I'm a Lib Dem,
right.
I asked him, would you ever vote to join Reform? And he did say no, but he did say, he did actually praise Reform for actually pushing this issue. So on that, we all agree. So Lib Dems are even agreeing with them on this.
Yours is a really good point, and I will make a mental note, and I will ask about those constituencies where the MP can just decide that she has decided to join Reform. Just lastly, if we look at this one, and you seem a fairly balanced bloke, and you obviously have an interest in politics, and that you work for the Lib Dems, how humiliating...
I don't work for them, I'm a Lib Dem voter.
Oh, you Lib Dem, I'm sorry, I thought you worked for the local MP. My apologies. In the list of U-turns, how embarrassing is this particular one as regards local democracy?
It's a joke. Look, they've got to get rid of Starmer. This is it. He can't stay on this. It's just ridiculous. You can't... He's nice bloke, but he's not strong.
I know this sounds weird. He's not a good politician. I know he's the Prime Minister.
He's not. You don't have to be. I mean, you can be a moderate, quite boring politician, but be quite effective. I mean, Eisenhower was a boring politician. You could have said in the 60s and 50s in America, but he was quite effective. You know, you don't have to have charisma, but it's just he just has
no
leadership. He has no, he can't make decisions.
Enjoyed our conversation, Charles. Thank you. Ted Kitchingham has sent in, you right-wing journalists are the worst. So Labour council elections, there follows an uproar in the press and the radio and TV. The government changes its mind, and guess what? There's another uproar. Instead of criticising the government due to changing its mind, you should be crowing about how great you and your right-wing colleagues are and patting yourselves on the back. I do question why the government didn't take legal advice about cancelling elections. Well, Mr Kitchingham, you seem... I'm quite happy for you to go after it, doesn't bother the slightest, but your last point actually underscores it. Why didn't this supposedly forensically skilled barrister... Perhaps he was a barista. Perhaps he made the coffee. Maybe he's not a barrister, he's a barista. This supposedly forensically skilled barrister didn't take legal advice. I think, Mr Kitchingham, you've made the point, but thank you. Do keep him coming. More calls on this in a moment. Now to the United States. President Trump criticising as inappropriate a clean energy and climate deal signed by California and British government, claiming it will not be successful. Now, just to give you an idea, I think California's economy is something like the fourth or fifth biggest in the world. Yes, you did hear that correctly. It's a huge, huge state with which to do a deal. But it's combined two of President Trump's favourite foils, Gavin Newsom, the California governor, widely seen as a front-runner to be the next Democratic presidential candidate, and also, of course, the Greens and Ed Miliband. And this whole idea of what he saw as President Trump calls a green con. It pledges cooperation on clean energy, technology, including offshore wind, and, according to Mr. Miliband, it could create jobs here in the UK. Let's talk to Professor David Reiner, who's Professor of Technology Policy at the University of Cambridge and Assistant Director of the University of Cambridge's Energy Policy Research Group, and joins me now. Good to have you on board, Professor. Thank you. What do you understand that this deal might be able to provide? Morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. What can it provide? I mean, just to be perfectly clear, I mean, the UK, I think, already has deals with 10 or 11 other US states. So this is not particularly new. I think, as you mentioned, a lot of this, I think, has to do with personal grudges. I think one personal grudge, obviously, was Gavin Newsom. But also, I think, you know, Donald Trump really doesn't like wind, and offshore wind in particular. I mean, he has his golf courses up in Aberdeenshire, and I think that probably is the origin of his dislike of wind. And so he, in the context of U.S. federal lands, has tried to cancel as many offshore wind projects as he can. So he's very much anti-wind. And so the kind of coming together of offshore wind and Gavin Newsom, I think, has kind of propelled this criticism. When the UK signed deals with, you know, Florida or Washington State, he hasn't commented. I think it's notable that he's done it in the context of California.
The path that's being trod by Ed Miliband and his department and the British government, how supportive are you of that?
I mean, this won't accomplish particularly much. I mean, it's I think a signal more than it is anything that will lead to kind of immediate benefits. But as you noted, California is a very large economy. I think they have, like the UK and the rest of Europe, have gotten behind the kind of clean energy in a way that the Trump administration is quite hostile to. So, you know, trying to make common cause with California in this context does make a lot of sense. The UK has actually been a global leader in offshore wind and offshore wind industry. So if anything, I think that could be a benefit to the UK in terms of California's appetite for continuing with its kind of wind.
What really matters to my listeners, you won't be surprised, Professor, Mr. Miliband tells me on occasions that it can create jobs, but it will also lower energy bills. How realistic is that?
As with many of these things, over the longer term, there's some potential truth to that. I think the question is in the short term, it's giving us greater energy independence, and in that sense that we would have to import less natural gas, say, into the country. But you know, whether it really can magically lower costs at the same time, I think is we're still a while away from.
We'll have to wait and see how it turns out. David Reiner, Professor of Technology Policy at the University of Cambridge and Assistant Director of the University of Cambridge's Energy Policy Research Group. Thanks for your input on that. I got one right today, then. California's economy is now the fourth largest on the planet, so I might not get the lines from Jaws right, but I got that right. It's overtaken Japan. That's just one state in the United States. My word. Quite a deal to be done. Democracy restored. Chris in Richmond, you're on the radio. Hi, Chris.
Yeah.
Morning.
Good morning. Yeah, well, clearly it is shambolic, and I feel sorry for all those councils and the workers and electrical services too, having to fix it at the last minute. But I will say the same as your previous caller. I mean, Farage really cares about democracy. Two questions to ask him. Number one, is Braverman, Jenrick and Rossendale going to stand for election?
Yep, very good point made by the earlier caller. You're absolutely right. We need to challenge him on that.
And secondly, what about PayPal donations, right, which they allow, which no other party allows? A fantastic way of laundering money, fraud, money from abroad. I mean, that is outrageous that that's allowed to happen. You know, and if we're worried about democracy, ban overseas, you know...
I'm sorry, I mean, what is your problem with PayPal? I mean, I've...
Because you can't check where it's coming from. Fundamentally,
oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I've got you. I see. Right. So you're concerned about the provenance of the money, where the money's coming from.
Well, exactly. Oh, exactly. And overseas donors, which I think this government is finally getting around to banning.
Yeah.
You know, these are issues with Nick speaking. But the other thing I would say, Nick, what is the turnout in local elections over the last 10, 15 years?
Oh, it'll be in the 30s and 40s, I would have thought.
Exactly.
Maybe struggling into 40s on a good day.
Yeah, because local councils have been muzzled. Their funding has been stripped bare. They can't from fixing potholes. You know, and hopefully sorting out social care. They don't have any power to do anything. So let's talk about the elections. Let's also spend the money on local government so that they're, you know...
Well, you've got to spend £63 million because of this shambles, unfortunately.
Well, exactly. And what a scandalous waste of money.
Yeah. Well, we're on that. Yeah, I look forward to speaking to someone who is reformed. We do need to ask why people such as Suella Braverman and Robert Jenrick aren't putting themselves up for election. That's a very good point. You're the second caller to make that. So, I look forward to that. Chris, thank you. Just coming up to news, 8:28. Let's get one more call in. Andy in Stratford-upon-Avon. Andy, again, council elections. Is this the most humiliating of the U-turns?
Well, with respect, Nick, he's running out of excuses now. Who else is he going to blame? Who did he get
it's the lawyers this time. This is the lawyers.
Right, well... So is he going to sack the lawyers now because they've now changed their advice? Now, we're paying for all this.
Yep.
And it's just a joke. He's always blaming somebody. Now, the lawyers don't change their sort of advice within 3 months. They've only changed their advice because somebody stood up to it. You know, Nigel Farage has sort of questioned it, and they've suddenly now backtracked again. Well, what a joke. Absolute ridiculous. Why don't they get it right? Why don't they do it properly and stick to what they say?
Because, unfortunately... It would appear in most areas they're incompetent, and in some areas they take decisions that are illegal. Lastly, Andy, it's as plain and simple as that.
I think you're 100% correct.
All right, buddy. Look after yourself up there in beautiful Stratford-upon-Avon. We'll talk again soon. Coming up after the news, how difficult is it to be Jewish in this country, particularly in the streets of London? Well, comedian Matt Lucas, who is of Jewish origin, found out the other day trying to travel on the London Underground.
You don't know about America?
No, I have no comment about it, by the way.
Palestinians. You've got a problem with Palestinians, Matt?
No.
Just absolutely irresponsible, unwarranted. We'll look at that in more detail after this. It's 8:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC, and the news is with Dominic Ellis.
A government minister has told Nick that he still has confidence in Keir Starmer, despite his latest U-turn on postponing local elections. Ministers say 30 votes in England will now go ahead after the government received advice following a legal challenge by Reform UK. The Metropolitan Police has told LBC that it's looking into claims that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's protection team turned a blind eye to his visits to see Jeffrey Epstein. LBC has spoken to a former senior officer who's raised concern that some may have withheld information. And the rate of unemployment in the UK rose slightly to 5.2% in the 3 months to December, up from 5.1%. Annual wage growth, excluding bonuses, fell in the same period to 4.2% compared to 4.7%. LBC weather mostly dry, with sunny spells, rain in the southwest of England. Later, a high of 8 degrees.
On the latest episode of The Newsagents.
We're going to be unpacking what actually went on with Labour Together and their investigation into top journalists. And we'll be asking whether Pam Bondi is really trying to cover up the cover-up of the Epstein files.
Get the latest episode of The Newsagents with Emily Maiklis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
The Hillary sale ends soon, so get window wise and grab these amazing offers while you still can. Like up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, grab £50 off your electric blind order and conveniently control your blinds for less. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, the Hillary sale ends on the 9th of March. Conditions apply.
Okay, done. Move that and... Oh, new ways to invest.
Okay.
Foolproof guaranteed returns. Invest today.
All right, I think I will.
Way before you seal the deal, check if it's real and if a company's authorised by the FCA.
Oh, thanks.
Search FCA Firm Checker.
Tell you exactly what you need to do. Dominate your finances.
Sunday morning, listening to questionable financial advice from the FinTok Bros on his social feed.
Drowning in green. Scale, 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 scale.
This is the moment Isaac chose to search Barclays Life Skills, get some better money intel, and save up for that new skateboard. We're helping young people become money confident. Search Barclays Life Skills. Barclays. Make money work for you.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
To the London Underground. We will come back to our conversation about those local council elections. Luke, you're going to be the next caller, but aware that we do need to show you or give you some other stories that are on the news agenda. And comedian, great comic actor, Matt Lucas, harassed by a pro-Palestinian activist on the London Underground, caught in part by some social media.
Free Palestine. Free Palestine, Matt Lucas. Free Palestine.
Hi, how are you?
You don't like the suit that I'm wearing, do you?
Sorry?
You don't like what I'm wearing?
No, I have no comments about it, by the way.
Palestinians. You've got a problem with Palestinians, Matt?
No.
Now, Mr. Lucas was raised in a Reformed Jewish household, although his parents came from Orthodox Jewish backgrounds. Several members of his family on his mother's side had fled Nazi Germany for the Netherlands before the Second World War. His grandmother arrived in the UK at the outbreak of the Second World War in 1939. Now, this was absolutely unwarranted. To my knowledge, Mr. Lucas hasn't been particularly forthcoming with his views on the rights or wrongs of what's going on in the Middle East. His crime, I put in quotes, was simply to be Jewish and was challenged. And it ends with him being supposedly the slur, quotes, you're a Zionist. Well, I'm a Zionist. I believe in the State of Israel. That's a slur now, is it, to be a Zionist? How have we come to this? Russell Langer is Director of Public Affairs at the Jewish Leadership Council and joins me now. Ms. Lang, sorry for mangling. I'll say it again, the Jewish Leadership Council. Good to have you on. Okay, how's it come to this then? Good morning.
Morning. Well, it was horrific, I think, to watch that video and to see... Yeah, a celebrity who happens to be Jewish suddenly being asked harassed with Free Palestine. And I think it's important just to state out, you know, there's nothing wrong with supporting Palestinians. There's nothing wrong with that cause. But if you're just taking that as a phrase and shouting it at Jews that you see on the London Underground, then that isn't sympathy for the Palestinians. That's not support for the Palestinians. That is anti-Jewish harassment. It's pure anti-Semitism. And... you ask how it's come to this. Well, unfortunately, it's symbolic of what we're seeing elsewhere in this country. We had the report last week of the anti-Semitic incident over the last year. And, yeah, this is something that we are seeing far too often. Far too many of the reported incidents of anti-Semitism are people taking supposed support for the Palestinians, but just using it as a way to target Jewish people for being Jewish.
Now, this is getting attention, obviously, because Matt Lucas is a hugely valued and much-loved entertainer and actor. I wonder how many Jewish people are enduring this on the Underground and in Manchester and in Leeds and in other cities and just goes unnoticed.
Well, exactly. Unfortunately, this is not the first time one of these videos that I've seen. Too often, to be honest with you, we tend to see these videos where bystanders get out their phones and video these scenes while Jews are being harassed on the tube. And unfortunately, nobody steps in. And this is something that it, you know, for Jewish people these days, you know, there's always that question. Do you go out visibly Jewish? Do you go out? Do you take your kippah off? Lots of people have been asking themselves that question over the last few years.
Do you take yours off?
I think there's always that question in terms of, as somebody who doesn't tend to wear one most days, when I do put one on, I am particularly conscious about it. But the, I think it's important to state, after the Bondi Beach attack, when I think there was a lot of conversation about anti-Semitism in this country and around the world, you know, I did get a bus to work that day and I saw lots of religious school children wearing their kippot. And it made me proud that that is something that happens in this country. And the vast majority of people in this country, the vast majority of your listeners, Nick, are good people who will be horrified by these sorts of scenes and horrified by what they read. But unfortunately, it's that risk of that question of will that minority who are posing a threat cause an issue? And is that a risk worth taking?
Lastly, you're probably aware that the US anti-Semitism czar, Rabbi Yehuda Kaplan, is on a tour across Europe and has said of the United Kingdom that Jewish hatred has been left to run amok in Britain and the government's not doing enough. This is an outsider's view. A response on that, if you would.
So anti-Semitism is running amok, and we can say that in the complete lack of surprise when we had the Yom Kippur attack on the synagogue in Manchester in October. You know, that was a shock for the community, but unfortunately, when I was up in Manchester the day after, people weren't surprised. It was a matter of when, not if, something like that was going to happen, and that's what we've been seeing. And you know, there is more that the government needs to be doing. We are appreciative of the support that they are giving to organisations like the Community Security Trust to help secure our community. But that isn't enough anymore. I think our community is tired of living behind high fences, behind thick doors, behind CCTV, behind security guards. That is unfortunately a necessity in the short term. But the conversation really needs to move on as to how we move on as a country to not need that infrastructure to protect our Jewish community. And, you know, it is an issue in the UK. I think there is an important point to make about those comments that, yeah, anti-Semitism isn't just an issue in the UK. It's an issue around the world. We have seen deadly terror attacks in the USA as well. So I think countries need to work together to tackle this threat, both domestically and internationally.
I will leave it there. Russell Langer, thank you. You're Director of Public Affairs at the Jewish Leadership Council. I want to get to calls on this. Thank you, Mr. Langer. Bo Rock, you'll be the first caller on that. But Luke is in Bromley to round off for now our conversation about local democracy and the local elections and the assault on democracy. Your view on that, Luke. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. What a great day for democracy. On Shrove Tuesday, Pancake Day. So enjoy pancakes too.
Yes.
It's a day of what? Of eating up the chaff and, you know, repenting and fasting and stuff like that.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think Labour need to repent a little bit here. It's a day where it's a big deal. Whatever your politics, more people voting, 5 million people, is a great day for democracy.
Lastly, how humiliating a day, though, is it for Sir Keir Starmer?
It's another nail in the coffin. He's on his way out anyway. It's just a question of when. I predict it'll be after these elections, which he's just enabled 5 million more people to vote.
After the local election, says Luke. Thank you for that. Let's talk about this problem of anti-Semitism involving Matt Lucas. Ari in Manchester. I went out for a drink to a 5-star hotel in Manchester on Saturday night with friends. When I was leaving, someone shouted, "Free Palestine." It hardly ever happens that I don't get abuse if I walk around with my skullcap or kippah on. Usually by young people, it's become a nightmare to be openly Jewish in England. They say it's political and not anti-Semitic, but neither Matt nor myself are Israeli. Bo Rock on this in Barnet. Bo Rock, what do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, sir. What are you going to tell me?
Well, I go to a synagogue in Manchester when I was a student there and a doctor, and I was about 5 minutes away from the attack on Yom Kippur. I don't walk, I use a cap when I go on the tube.
Mm-hmm.
I don't walk around with my skull cap and my yarmulke, kippah, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Wherever I walk around in London, it is, when I was in university, I used to get shouted at.
It Which university? Did you in University of Manchester, did you say?
I was in the University of Manchester.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a horrific place to be as a Jewish person at the moment. I have friends who've been completely abused. It's absolutely horrific wherever you are in the UK as a Jewish person.
What sort of age are you?
I'm 29. I'm married. I have a child. I'm getting out of here. We're
just going to say, do you want to live, as a 29-year-old man, hopefully you've got many years left on this planet, do you want to spend them in the UK? And I've just heard the answer. You don't.
Absolutely not. All my family have moved out of this country. All my immediate family, I've got 5 sisters, they've all moved, my parents, they've moved. There's no reason for me to stay here.
Where are you
I'm completely terrified of staying here.
Are you going to Israel?
We're going to Israel, yeah.
And is it because, did you say you've got a child now?
Yes.
How much is it? Obviously, there's your safety, but then there's the safety of your wife and there's the safety of your child. Is it the safety pretty much of your wife and child that's really decided to make you make the move then, Borok?
Absolutely, absolutely. And also my own safety. The only place that I feel genuinely safe is in a state which is Jewish, because there is nowhere in the world that I would want to be. Australia, there was a Bondi Beach attack. In America, and in the last year or so, there have been attacks on synagogues. In the UK, growing up here, I couldn't, but somebody would have told me that a synagogue would be targeted at the place, schools. We have security out of, in front of our schools, our nurseries, our synagogues. It is terrifying. I cannot wear my kippah out as a Jewish person. It's absolutely insane to say that this is an inclusive country where Jewish people cannot go around openly Jewish.
When you were a teen, sort of 15 years ago, what was it like growing up as a teenager, as a Jewish teenager in London?
I walked to school, took the bus, wore my yarmulke, but occasionally I would get shouted at. It would happen,
even
but
as
just
a teen.
The frequency. Yeah, even as a teen. I mean, we're talking in the last 10, 15 years, and it's just become more frequent.
What was the impact of the October 7th attack?
You only have to look at the CST figures to know that anti-Semitism shot up. On the day, I was in Manchester at the time, people were celebrating in the streets. I mean, you had to go, I'm not going to name the certain areas of Manchester. There are certain areas of Manchester where you would go there, walk around, and there were people celebrating in the streets that Israel, that women had been raped, their children had been captured and killed. I mean, people were celebrating this. This is anti-Semitism in this country. It's a real thing. People don't realise it. It is real.
Lastly, is it with a heavy heart you'll leave the UK? Had you hoped to put a life together in the United Kingdom?
Very much so. When I was young, I think I was very nationalistic. I was always very confused. Why don't we have a national anthem sung in our schools like in America? Why don't we feel that sort of patriotism? And now it's all gone. I don't feel... I mean, people like you, Nick, good people, the type of people that I will miss. I went to University of Manchester with very good people, people that I will miss. But you're few and far between.
Obviously, the safety of your wife and your child comes first. Do stay in touch, Borok. Thank you for your call. I fear that is going to be an all too common a conversation. You look after yourself, though, in your new life. Rich says, Matt Luke is being harassed. Yet another example of the militant left. They are far, far worse than the supposed far right. We'll take more calls on that. Coming up in the next hour, we actually covered this yesterday, and in a sense it's got worse. The measles outbreak now that could see unvaccinated pupils excluded from schools in a part of London. Dr. James Gill is a clinical lecturer at the University of Warwick, and he told LBC...
96% of the individuals with measles haven't had a vaccine. We know that it is a highly infectious disease. One person with measles can spread it to 18 other people.
More on that in the next hour. It's 8:45, LBC News Headlines. Dominic Ellis.
A government minister has told Nick that he still has confidence in the Prime Minister despite his latest U-turn on postponing local elections. Scotland Yard has told LBC that it's looking into claims that some of Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's protection team turned a blind eye to his visits to see Jeffrey Epstein. And official figures show the rate of unemployment in the UK rose slightly to 5.2% in the 3 months to December. LBC weather mostly dry with sunny spells, rain in the southwest of England, a high of 8 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M4 remains closed westbound from Junction 10 at the A329M and Junction 11 at Reading. It's following an accident and the emergency repair works are taking place. There are severe delays on the approach. All the surrounding routes are extremely busy, but especially the A329M, which is hardly moving at all. On the M25, there are delays clockwise at Junction 16 at the M40 after an accident, and clockwise it's very busy heading towards Junction 19 at Watford, and that's also because of an accident where one lane is closed. On the trains, Great Western Railway services aren't running between Windsor and Eton Central and Slough after a train broke down. And on the Underground, there are severe delays on the Bakerloo line and minor on the Central and Piccadilly lines.
This is LBC.
With up to £3,000 every year towards career growth at Amazon, I started in the warehouse knowing I could train in things like coding or robotics. It turns my job into a career. So it means I can be who I want to be, even if I haven't quite decided who that is yet.
Amazon, opening doors with up to £3,000 every year towards career growth.
Eligibility conditions about type and duration of employment apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear All Change Please, you'll know you already have. Go with your flow with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
All right, resistance up. Let's climb.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, my knee's playing up again.
Have you ever had it looked at?
No, but I've been doing a few stretches.
When my shoulder went, Benenden Health got me expert help. Showed me exactly where I was going wrong.
30 seconds, people.
Press play on your health with physiotherapy and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services, including physio. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
With up to £3,000 every year towards career growth at Amazon, I started in the warehouse knowing I could train in things like coding or robotics. It turns my job into a career. So it means I can be who I want to be, even if I haven't quite decided who that is yet.
Amazon. Opening doors with up to £3,000 every year towards career growth. Eligibility conditions about type and duration of employment apply.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Wednesday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's come out, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
The Hillary sale ends soon, so get window wise and grab these amazing offers while you still can. Like up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, grab £50 off your electric blind order and conveniently control your blinds for less. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, the Hillary sale ends on the 9th of March. Conditions apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming to you, Debbie, you're going to be my next caller in just a moment. Now, this comes from Steve. Will your caller enjoy his life in Israel in the illegally annexed land, Palestinian land? I never hear you say anything about the illegal annexation of the West Bank and on you go. Steve, you've fallen for the complete trap. I've no idea what Barak thinks about that. I've no idea whether he has any support for Benjamin Netanyahu or not. No idea at whatsoever. But what does it matter? Barak is a Jewish man. He might vehemently oppose the Israeli government. He might support them, I don't know. But it's not relevant to this conversation. Barak fears for his safety, probably more for the safety of his wife and his child, because they are Jewish. Nothing to do with Israeli. Just stop. Get that point clear. I have many Jewish friends who, I won't say despise, that's true, strongly oppose Netanyahu, strongly oppose Netanyahu, strongly oppose a number of Israeli administrations. But they feel threatened, not because of that, because they are Jewish. Don't conflate the two. You can be Jewish in this country and not support anything that the Israeli government does. And you, Steve, have fallen down the trap of that idiot who was harassing Matt Lucas. To my knowledge, Mr. Lucas has never said anything about the situation in the Middle East. I've got to admit, I didn't even know, shows my level of ignorance, I didn't even know he was Jewish. But he should be allowed to get a tube. Debbie's in Finchley. What's the story you want to tell me, Debbie? Good morning.
Oh, hi, Nick. Good morning. Oh, it's such a pleasure to talk to you. You're probably my favourite. Oh, but I shouldn't have favourites. No. I shouldn't have favourites.
You're my favourite Debbie in Finchley. I do know that.
Oh, okay. I heard that chap and he's been in Manchester and my daughter's just about to graduate from Manchester.
Oh, congratulations. Well done. What's she studied?
She did a geography degree and okay. And she's actually already secured her grad job, which...
Brilliant.
Took a lot, well I have done. To say. Well done. Hundreds of applications. But the point is here, I just, as a mum who's... raised her daughters, I would say, and all her children, sort of, mm-hmm. to be proud of who they are. They're, you know, we're Jewish. not particularly religious. Yes, we have a close connection to Israel, but we don't. We wouldn't walk around, you know, holding an Israeli flag for fear of kickbacks, for fear of somebody commenting, for fear of, you know, being safe, not taking chances. And
what's
I think
life
her
been
time
like for her up in Mount? Because I obviously we know about the synagogue. I've just been speaking with that gentleman who said he had a tough time at university in Manchester. What's life been like for her as a Jewish woman up there?
Do you know what? Tough, especially since October the 7th. And it's taken pains to. I mean, I have to say, in a weird way, and I know this doesn't sound great, but I mean, every cloud, she's definitely grown stronger with her identity. Okay. It's actually pulled her into the community, I think, in a much stronger way. Actually, probably going to synagogue more than she ever did, attending things that because she felt safer. So, you know, in many ways, it's had a positive effect, but a negative effect, if you know what I mean. She's really identified with. She's not run away from her identity. No, she's really embraced it and felt that she, you know, she needs to have that strength. And it's proud. I'm proud of her, but I also can't wait for her to leave Manchester. It's a shame and come home.
Is she going to work in or around London?
Yes, she is. Yeah, Soho area. Got a job and we're super proud of her and we can't wait.
And does she wear a Star of David as a necklace or anything? Would you know from just seeing her that she's Jewish?
All my kids have very Israeli names, if that makes sense to you. Okay. Right. So their middle names are quite traditionally Jewish, but their first names are quite Israeli, if you understand what that means.
Okay.
They tend to be quite short, 2-3 letters.
Right.
So it is. She gets a lot of, and also my husband's Israeli, so there's a real mix. My kids look sort of Middle Eastern, and they get asked quite a lot, where are you from? What's your heritage?
Just saying from Finchley.
Oh, yeah, they do. But, I mean, it doesn't. It just shows. It's a real life lesson for them.
Yeah.
It's all of this, I suppose, you know, gives you the grit and resilience that you need. But it's a real shame. It's a real shame.
Lastly, yes, it does, but you shouldn't need grit and resilience to live your life in a country such as the United Kingdom as a young girl. I mean, as a young woman. That's ridiculous.
Correct. But I have to tell you a positive. My son, who's at school, his best mate, his best friend since year 9, has been a Palestinian boy. They've been together at school, they're at boarding school, they've been together at school, and they have been, even through the time when all this kicked off, they have been solid mates. And I said, oh God, how do you do that? And he went, we decide not to sort of talk about things like that. They just keep their friendship as first and foremost. And you know what, if they can do it, I mean, I don't know what's wrong with all of us, really.
Well, from your lips. Debbie, thank you. Well done to your boy. And well done to your daughter as well, coming down from university. That's great. She's got her job secured. I know loads of kids who are getting degrees and they can't get anything. We go to Manchester. Amir, what can you tell me, Amir? Morning to you.
Morning, Nick. I hope you're well, buddy. Just a quick one. I want to start by saying anti-Semitism is in no way correct in any way, shape or form. It's very, very wrong. The previous caller, the gentleman that studied in Manchester, that explained that he doesn't feel safe and all his family have moved to Israel.
Yes.
Don't we think that the fact that someone has explained or shouted Free Palestine is applicable to himself? But given the fact that him and his whole family want to go to Israel, I would argue that it's acceptably and suitable for himself, given the fact that there's a strong possibility that him and his family could well be in illegal settlements over there in Israel.
No, I don't think it is, folks, because there's no grounds to suggest that gentleman is, or any of his family, are in illegal settlements. But just, you're a bit like somebody who texted earlier, Steve, you have no idea what that gentleman's views are towards the illegal settlements. He might loathe them. So don't conflate the fact that, and I think it's appalling that the only place that man feels safe to raise his family is not in the United Kingdom, it's not in Australia, it's not in the UK, it's not in the United States. He's off to Israel because he's Jewish. I don't want to be rude, but honestly not being rude, but you have no idea what his political views are. He might actually actively believe in a state of Palestine, but he doesn't feel safe here because he's Jewish. That's the point we're getting at, Amir.
Yeah, but there's also this connection to Israel that he has.
Well, of course he has. That's where his family originally. That's where his family have gone.
Which would make it suitable. Obviously, granted, that's not the case for everyone.
But where else would a Jewish man of 29 raising a family feel safe? I don't blame him.
If
I was, would I leave if I was Jewish and where?
There's many places you can go that are safe other than Israel, isn't there? We can't just say that Israel is the only safe place for a Jewish person today.
Where?
Well, I'm sure there's Jewish communities in all parts of the world that are safe. We can't say that. We can't just say that Israel is the only place.
Just name a country, Amir.
Let's say, for example, I don't know, let's say...
No, it's exactly right. You can't go to the United States because of the tax. You certainly can't go to Australia. We know the UK. Across most of Western Europe, including France, anti-Semitism on the rise. Eastern Europe, despite the fact that many of the people of the families actually originate from areas of Eastern Europe, anti-Semitism is rife. There's nowhere to go. Now, you're probably going to say Fiji. I've no idea. But in reality, any developed country, there's nowhere these folk can go. Amir, I've enjoyed our conversation. Be safe. Look after yourself. Thank you. Luke's in Exeter. Luke, you're on the
radio.
Hello.
Yes, I can answer that question, my friend. Budapest. I was in Budapest recently. I mean, I'm a Christian background, but it's a beautiful place for Jewish people there, and it's a liberation place. So you're on there. Also, Ben Kentish, one of your presenters, Jewish, isn't he?
Yes.
You can't even ask somebody. And I asked him, Ben, your surname's not really the kind of standoff. Is like Epstein or anything like that. He turned around to me and he gave me some kind of aggro a little bit.
I don't like getting in conversation about other presenters. I just think it's not the done thing. But why does it matter? I don't know if I want to go. Yeah, I'm just like, why does it matter what Ben Kentish's last name might or might
nothing,
not be?
Not at all. It doesn't bother me whatsoever. But the thing, these people, a bit like sticks and stones and all that break my bones. You shouldn't worry about a few comments. Irish people are called potato men.
I don't know quite. I mean, I'm a little nervous here because it seems you basically just want to try and be as offensive as you can. Is there a point you want to make?
What I'm trying to say is that I can't understand is that these are white people, these Jewish people, but you have black people, Asian people that have to live with that colour of skin for the rest of their lives.
I don't see the correlation there. Maybe I'm missing something. Fortunately, Luke, we've come to the end of this conversation, so I can say goodbye and put it down to journalist necessity. Luke, if we talk again, let's hope we can move on to more fruitful territory. Coming up after the news.
Exclusion is on the cards for unvaccinated pupils as measles is spreading across North London schools. I'm LBC's Shivani Sharma getting reaction from parents in Enfield.
Plus, how to catch the phone snatchers. LBC is on patrol with the police and...
The new all-electric Vauxhall Corsa E is here. It's time to switch it up.
But is it actually a switch-off or a turn-off for electric vehicles? As one major manufacturer of Vauxhall says, they're going back to making diesel cars. I thought that was a killer, wasn't it, those diesel engines? Those stories and more will follow the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, a government minister has told LBC that Sir Keir Starmer is still the right man to lead the country, despite his latest U-turn on local elections. 30 votes in England will now go ahead after ministers received legal advice following a challenge by Reform UK. Downing Street initially said it wanted to reorganise local government before holding the votes. Speaking to Nick this morning, the Care Minister Stephen Kinnock insisted the public can still trust Labour to govern.
Keir Starmer is absolutely the right man to take us forward. I think we've seen over recent years...
Two hours before the U-turn, he was telling a radio station there will be no more U-turns. Less than 2 hours later, there was another U-turn.
Look, just think about the carousel of chaos that we had with the Tories.
What do you call
chopping
this,
and
Mr.
changing. Nick, this is about government taking U-turning. Difficult decisions, and sometimes the conditions change.
Scotland Yard says it's looking into claims that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's protection team turned a blind eye to his visits to see Jeffrey Epstein. LBC has exclusively spoken to a former senior officer who's raised concerns that some information wasn't passed on to the Met Police. We've changed the officer's voice to protect their identity.
Some of them started to wear signet rings and talking and behaving more like members of the royal family than a police officer. They seemed to get lost in that life. The royalty unit were terrified of reporting any questionable behaviour from the royals.
There's no suggestion of any criminality by Andrew during his visits to Epstein Island. The former prince has always strongly denied any wrongdoing. You can read more on this story on the LBC app.
Figures show the UK's unemployment rate hit a near five-year high in the final 3 months of 2025. It climbed to 5.2%, up from 5.1%. The Office for National Statistics says the data reflects weak hiring activity, but also that more people out of work are now looking for jobs. Ukrainian and Russian officials are due to meet in Geneva today to start a fresh round of peace talks. The Kremlin says discussions are likely to focus on land, which is considered the main sticking point. And the head of the Metropolitan Police says courts need to stop releasing repeat offender mobile phone thieves. Sir Mark Rowley is also calling on manufacturers and telecom companies to make it harder for criminals to resell stolen devices. Sir Mark's comments come as the force reports a drop in the number of recorded mobile phone thefts in London. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 44 at £10,512. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 14. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells, some rain in the southwest of England, a high of 8 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible, and make a claim with HMRC for free, online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC, from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after nine, Tuesday, February the 17th. Pupils could be excluded from school for 3 weeks if they come into contact with someone who has measles. The outbreak is continuing. We covered this briefly yesterday. We've actually got a reporter on the scene in North London, and you'll hear from her in just a moment. Plus, well, switching off now on electric cars and going back to diesel, a major motor manufacturer, Vauxhall. We'll tell you more about that. Plus, on the road with the catchers of the phone snatchers.
The Met is now using its own e-bikes and drones to chase phone thieves. I'm LBC's Fraser Knight, finding out what really happens if you report you're stolen.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Measles. Have you had it? Did you have the MMR? Are you one of the people who, after COVID, you had concerns, and I understand that, you had concerns about vaccinations, and you decided to have not to have your child or your children have the MMR? I would urge you to revisit that decision, as sadly an outbreak would appear to be growing in a particular part of London. I speak of Enfield, and LBC's reporter Shivani Sharma joins me from there, having spoken with staff and parents at a nursery in Enfield. Shivani, morning to you.
Nick, good morning. It's Home Truths for Children currently on half term. Get vaccinated or face exclusion. The local council here in Enfield is throwing everything at this measles problem, which is spreading like wildfire here, with more than 60 cases amongst primary school pupils and a nursery, with many of those cases spreading amongst unvaccinated pupils and leading to hospitalisation. And the setup here seems to be a breeding ground for the highly infectious disease, because within a short 10-minute walk, I've already counted half a dozen schools and nurseries all lined up within such a close proximity to each other. Now, Catherine is the manager of Head Start Cruise Hill Day Nursery here in Enfield, and she's told me she's extremely concerned about the outbreak.
We're being extra vigilant. Children get rashes all the time, normally viral rashes, but we're being extra vigilant. I've had, I think, two last week, you know, where the staff will call me over to look at the, you know, the baby. Well, my daughter's vaccinated. I mean, I didn't really think about it, but maybe because I also know the gravity, because I've been in childcare for many years now, and I know what happens when you don't, and if they become very, very poorly.
Now, Catherine hasn't had an outbreak of measles in her particular nursery. She says that the children, by and large, are vaccinated. But this isn't the case everywhere in the borough. In fact, only 64% of five-year-olds here are fully vaxxed, one of the lowest rates in the country. Now, Enfield Council is taking measures to address this problem, warning parents that unvaxxed children could be excluded from school for 21 days in line with national guidance if they're recognised as being a close contact of someone with measles. Now, I've been getting reaction from concerned parents, some of whom work in the education system themselves, and their children are in the nurseries and schools in this area.
My little one is not old enough to have his second MMR yet. Yeah, it does make me nervous in that sense that there's so much vulnerability and potential for things to get out of control.
We have had a parent that's come to us this morning and just asked, like, what do we do? We've got, a dad had a kidney transplant, so he's obviously, his immune system's really low, and they're really concerned in that sense. So we've just got to do lots of reassurance.
It's just like going back to COVID. I know it's a completely different scale of things, but every illness that is out there is just as severe as another. I personally made sure that my child got every single vaccine that they should have, just that it put me at rest, so that I knew that I did everything I could as a parent, which meant I could protect my child the best way possible. And it does, it just shocks me that there are parents out there that aren't doing the same.
Nick, some people here have told me they think there's a slow vaccine uptake because of old disproved tales about vaccines being linked to various conditions. But the message from health officials is clear. Get your children vaccinated. And the message from the council is if you don't, your child could face exclusion.
LBC's Shivani Sharma reporting. Let's bring to the conversation Dr. David Ellerman, who's Honorary Associate Professor in Child Health at the University College of London. As my colleague was saying there, we want to get to this sort of 95%. That gives what's called herd immunity. Just elaborate a little bit on that, if you would, Doctor.
Well, as you know, you get two doses of the measles vaccine, and the reason for that is that the first dose doesn't protect everybody. So that second dose protects those people who are not protected first time round. When you have that number, having the second dose, if you can get up to something like 97%, or 95%, perhaps a little less ambitious and more realistic, you will stop them getting measles, and it will stop promulgating in the community, because there will never be a circumstance where everybody can have it. As you heard from the reporter, there are some people that can't have the vaccine because their immune system is badly damaged, either because of something they were born with or because of treatment for a serious disease. And the only way of protecting those people is making sure that the rest of the community is protected. So yeah, we need 95%, and it's second dose.
Where are you on the idea that pupils could be excluded from school if they've come into contact with someone who has measles? Is that the right course of action, would you say, Doctor?
Well, in the past, what's happened is that children who can't have the vaccine have been excluded from school, which just doesn't seem right, does it, when you think about it, because it's not their choice. It does have some benefit, but it is limited benefit, because measles is infectious before the diagnosis is made. So someone with measles may already have spread it by the time that a doctor says you've got measles and they stop going to school. But it may protect subsequent waves of measles. So yes, it does have a value, but it's a very, very, very much a second, third best to getting people immunised.
It's probably worth telling parents who are still trying to make their minds up, measles can be fatal, can't it, Doctor?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we had a death last year. The recent deaths have been in people who have had a problem with their immune system. But it can kill normal people whose immune system works perfectly well. And before we had the measles vaccine, something like 100 people died a year. Before the MMR, perhaps 10 people died a year. And even though we see fewer cases of acute measles deaths, we're still seeing adults die of the long-term effects of measles. So, yes, it's a serious illness.
What was the impact of the concerns, which I never thought were valid, the concerns by some people about the COVID vaccinations? Has that had an impact on parents deciding not to have their child have the MMR?
It's probably had an effect across the board, because the decline in vaccination we're seeing is not just MMR, but it is the other vaccines as well. And I'm sure COVID played a part in that, because it raised the profile of vaccination, and there were lots of stories, some of them genuine. COVID probably did, the vaccine probably did cause a few deaths, but nothing like the disease. So the benefit of the vaccine far outweighed any hazards from it.
Lastly, one newspaper points out that Enfield is a very diverse London borough, with around 48% from black, Asian, minority, ethnic backgrounds, Bulgarians and Turks and others. Are there groups that it's hard to get the message across to that are resistant?
Well, there are. I don't think it's a case of being resistant. It's a case of being dubious for various reasons, or vaccination is top of your list, not top of your list of priorities when you've got problems getting food on the table, for example. So people are hesitant and they need the time to talk about it. And the populations you've mentioned, of course, are quite mobile as well. So they don't get stuck into a particular area. And they perhaps get left off GP lists. They don't get visited by a health visitor. And so people aren't in touch with them. So it's not that they're resistant. It's that they have some doubts, hence the term hesitancy. And they need someone to talk to. And there aren't enough health visitors, and practice nurses don't have the time. Though there is a government initiative to get some health visitors immunising, and some of that may be in people's homes where they find it difficult to get to clinics.
Enjoyed our conversation together today. Thank you for your time, Doctor. David Ellerman, Honorary Associate Professor in Child Health at the University College London. Let's get your voices on the radio. Who called in first? Jenny in Basildon was first. Good morning, Jenny. The point you want to make. You've had it, I read.
Oh,
measles.
Hi, yes. Yeah. Yeah, I caught it when I was 13.
Right.
That was 1978.
Right.
It was the worst thing I ever went through in my life.
I remember it as a kid. I think I was about 11. It's horrible. Horrible.
Yeah, it was, I think it was winter time. Mm. And we had a really lovely Indian doctor, GP.
Oh, yes.
He used to come in every day to see me. That's how worried he was.
Did your mum give you calamine lotion on all the bumps?
I can't remember, Nick. I was out of it. I don't remember a thing.
Really?
I remember it was in my eyes. I couldn't see properly.
Oh,
I thought I was going to go blind. Yeah. And then, to top it all, my mum was very, very good about keeping records of immunisations.
Yeah.
She used to write them down in a little book that we'd all had, the three of us.
Yeah.
My brother, 22 he was, he used to come over every, I think it was a Thursday or something, to see us.
Mm.
And my mum said, "Don't come over, she's got measles." And he went, "Oh, that's all right, oh, I've had it." And she went, "No, you haven't, you've not had it." She used to write down all the illnesses we've had. She went, "You haven't had it." And he came over and caught it.
Oh, no.
No, I swear to God, I was lying on the sofa, sort of covered over. He sat right across the other side of the room and he caught it.
Lastly, you had children yourself, Jenny?
Yeah, I've got a son, he's 32 now.
So, I'm sorry, was MMR around for... Yes, did you have...
Yeah, he's just... I mean, he had it when he was one. He had a bit of a reaction to it. So, I must admit, I wasn't very good. I did wait till he was a bit older to get the booster.
But you did have it done. Jenny, thank you for that story. Julie, you'll be the next caller, and we're covering other stories as well. We got on the road with the police trying to catch the phone snatchers. Sergeant Ryan Perry is with the Met. He told LBC...
Policing has advanced so much over the last sort of 12 to 18 months. We're using these bikes, we've obviously got the drone up, and the combination of all that technology together really provides some exciting opportunities.
9:15 now, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Speaking to Nick, a government minister says Sir Keir Starmer is still the right man to lead the country, despite his latest U-turn on local elections. Scotland Yard has told LBC that it's looking into claims that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's protection team turned a blind eye to his visits to see Jeffrey Epstein. And official figures show the UK's unemployment rate hit a near five-year high in the final 3 months of 2025. LBC weather mostly dry with sunny spells, rain in the southwest of England, a high of 8 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M4. It remains closed westbound between junctions 10 at the A329M and 11 at Reading at the A33. It's following an accident and the emergency repair works are still taking place, and there are huge delays on the approach and on all the surrounding routes. Also, the delays continue on the M25 clockwise at junction 16 at the M40 and also clockwise at junction 18 at Chorley Wood, and both of those delays are following accidents. On the trains, well, these problems continue for Great Western Railway. They can't run between Windsor and Eton Central and Slough. And also Avanti West Coast and London North Western services are delayed northbound at Milton Keynes Central.
LBC.
Train to Chichester. Flasks filled, snacks packed, all ready for Maisie's first stargazing adventure.
Come on, Maisie. Follow everyone up to the top of that hill.
Oh, look. That one's the plough.
Shooting star! Wow!
Made it. Last train back and feeling cosmic. And it seems we have an astronaut in the making. Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Nothing beats that electric feeling of live sport. As the proud automotive partner of Team GB, Vauxhall is supporting Britain's extraordinary athletes through every nail-biting, glue-to-the-box moment. Vauxhall is working towards a better future for our nation with its electric vehicle range, including the compact Vauxhall Combo Electric Van, made in Britain for Britain. Head to lbc.co.uk and tell us about your own extraordinary work feats to win £1,000.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Wednesday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Tax is changing from April 2026.
If you're a sole trader or a landlord
with a turnover above £50,000,
you'll need to use recognised software to keep records
and send quarterly updates of your income and expenses.
There's no avoiding it. Tax is changing. Get ready. Search HMRC Making Tax Digital.
The Philly Cheese Stack is back at McDonald's and it's still intensely cheesy. Imagine the cheesiest thing ever. Now cover it in cheese. Add two beef patties, cheddar cheese sauce, crispy onions and even more cheese. The Philly Cheese Stack. Did we mention it's cheesy? Available until the 16th of March 2026 from 11 a.m. Fees apply to delivery orders. Price and participation may vary. Subject to availability.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's continue our conversation about the measles vaccine, the MMR. Just to remind you, these are the key figures. 95% is what we want for what's called herd immunity. We've heard from the doctor that ambitious, but we could get to the 90s, we'd be in a good place. National uptake was 88.4%, down from a high of 88.8% 10 years ago. So we were hitting the near 90s, and that meant that we were, in the views of the World Health Organization, measles had been eradicated a few years ago. That has that advice has now changed, sadly. Measles has not been eradicated, as you know. And in Enfield, we're at 64.3%, a dramatic drop. Julie's in Buckingham. Julie, the point you want to make. Hello.
Morning, Nick. Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to sort of use the example of the US, because we lived in the US for a few years, and certainly in Virginia, so I can't speak for other states.
Go on.
Prior to starting school, you had to, your children had to do an annual sort of medical, so that would include eyes, ears, sort of checks, quite useful. But also part of that was showing you're up to date on immunisations.
Oh, yes.
So you would then produce that for the school.
My children had to do that in Westchester County, New York State. Yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten that. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think it was quite a good approach because it sort of caught everyone. And I think there were various exemptions. So I think if you could prove there was a reason why your children didn't need to be vaccinated. But it just meant, obviously, it would then get the percentages up. And I thought it was quite an easy way for administrators to check each year.
And I see.
And it caught other
things
as well.
Where were you in the US? Sorry, which state were you in, did you say?
Virginia. And certainly in DC as well, the same.
You've reminded me, the one reason you were, if there were religious reasons, I remember the schools in Westchester County would allow that for religious beliefs, if you didn't have the injection. And that may be something worth looking at in the UK, or certainly in Enfield, because it's a real problem, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. And I mean, you just have to listen to your previous caller and it's just horrific. So I think it's reminding people of you know, the severity of the disease. And, you know, it's quite a good catch-all then just to check that people are heeding the warnings and acting on it.
Well done, Julie. I'd forgotten that. Gosh, your memories are coming back, having to produce those, or my ex-wife having to produce those certificates when we took the children in. Julie, thank you. Ernie, you're going to talk about measles. Joe Henshaw has pointed out calamine lotion was used for alleviating chickenpox rash discomfort, Nick, not for measles. Both are unpleasant diseases. So I got that wrong. So I got, you're going to need a bigger boat, wrong. I got calamine lotion. At least I got the size of the Californian economy right. I mean, I'm batting one for three. Or one for two. Actually, I got that wrong. One for two. Oh, dear, dear, dear. Right, let's go to other matters. I've told you how. Now, when I come out of the London Underground, I never get my phone out immediately, even to get a map. I will walk a little distance, or you'll often find me standing in shop doorways, not loitering with intent, but I don't use the phone. And I made a point, and I tell my wife, don't take your phone out of your pocket or your purse the minute you get out the tube. Just don't. That's where they're looking. Well, the police are trying to put the situation right. They're now using their own e-bikes and drones to go after the phone snatchers. They say the number of mobiles being stolen has fallen by more than 12% from a high of over 80,000 as recently as 2024. I have to say, it doesn't feel like it, but anyway, LBC's Fraser Knight joined officers to find out what really happens in the moments after a phone has been stolen.
Chapel on e-bike is going to be dressed in all black and going very fast.
These are the Met Interceptors, specialist officers who tackle serious crime. And just now, their focus is on phone theft in central London, because the problem has become so prolific.
My name's Ryan Perry, I'm a sergeant on the MO7 Interceptors. If we're out on these, you'll be a brave man, or boy, as the case may be, to be out offending.
So I'm in the back of one of several cars out tonight to chase thieves after they strike. But there's also some officers out on their own e-bikes. They're trying to beat the criminals at their own game as they race across the city at speeds of up to 60 miles per hour.
These are slightly quicker than the standard bikes they tend to use. We can go places they can go, down steps, through alleyways. We've obviously got the drone up, and the combination of all that technology together really provides some exciting opportunities to actually deal with the individuals intent on committing that criminality.
It's not long before someone calls in, having had their phone stolen near Marble Arch.
Charles, there's still someone on the phone to the victim.
The woman is speaking to the control room as she uses her husband's phone to track the thief. But to speed things up, the officers I'm with decide to call her directly.
Where's he tracking to now?
Towards Buckingham Palace.
We're sending units there now, so if you just stay on the phone, keep providing me with where he is, OK?
People often talk about a golden hour to catch a criminal, but what happens next shows that when it comes to phone theft, that's more like a golden few minutes.
Towards Warwick Square. Belgrave Road. Vauxhall Bridge Road. Someone cover the bridge. Vauxhall Bridge.
The officers were so close, but then their key source of intelligence ran dry.
Alright, he's turned location off now. The phone is off. No more tracking available.
We're too late. The thief might have lost his bike, but he managed to get away. Over the last 4 weeks, this team of interceptors has helped the Met make 370 arrests, and they've seized 770 stolen phones. Matt Twist is the assistant commissioner.
Week on week, we're seeing about 30% less phones stolen from Westminster than we did in the same week last year. Overall, I think the numbers are about 10,000 less from 2025 to 2024. But there's still more to go.
But many of the offenders being caught, I'm told, are already in the criminal justice system. They have outstanding charges, some running into the 20s, and they're out on bail. It's a game of whack-a-mole, and while police wait for the courts to convict and sentence, the same people are back out, wreaking havoc time and time again.
LBC's Fraser Knight reporting, if you've had a phone theft, how responsive were the police? The latest figures, although they are down, the assistant commissioner was absolutely right, Matt Twist, assistant commissioner was absolutely right, they are down 10,000, but it's still at 71,391, which equates to roughly one every 8 minutes in London. Every 8 minutes. And as so much of your lives, or our lives, not your lives, our lives, I mean, I really question, do you know what I see more and more people doing now? Is their credit cards are on their phones. And I understand the ease of it. I get it. Of course it's... And I carry a chunky wallet and you're going to say, oh, it's so much easier. But then if your phone goes... And obviously you've lost all your contacts, you've lost your diary, although I do keep a regular diary as well, much to the amusement of all my colleagues. But if you've got your credit cards as well, I mean, you just switched off. We might take calls on that, but we're talking measles and what it's like to have it. Excuse me, Ernie's in Watford. Did you have it as a child? Ernie, good morning.
Yeah, morning, Nick. Yeah, hello, sir. I appeal for parents to get their children vaccinated. I caught measles in the 40s as a kid. In them days, there was no vax at all. Only vax was obviously diphtheria,
polio,
off, scarlet fever.
Polio.
No vax at all in them days.
Oh, good Lord.
And my appeal is don't finish up like me.
Come on, you've got to tell your story. So what year was it and how old were you, Ernie?
I was an infant at infant school.
Yes.
In 1947.
Yes.
I caught measles and finished up, obviously, with pneumonia.
Lord.
My saviour, Nick, was a drug that everybody referred to it, the same as Winston Churchill did. If you read his book, he was treated with the same drug as I was.
Mm.
We all called it M&D, which is really an antibiotic.
Mm.
But my appeal, Nick, is now, I've finished up now. Thankfully, I'm still alive.
Mm.
But I finished up, Nick, with scarring on my left lung, which I live with for the rest of my life.
Mm.
I've now got the prognosis of it's called bronchiectasis.
Sorry, it's called what?
Bronchiectasis.
Oh, Lord, right.
Not to be confused with bronchitis.
Right.
So now I'm permanently open to infection because of the left lung and the bronchiectasis.
Right.
And also... I'm now permanently with the thoracic clinic at Watford General Hospital.
Oh, good Lord. All because you got nursed as a kid.
And the respiratory department over at St Paul's Hospital. May I just give them a plug as well?
Of course.
The way they look after me, mate, I'll tell you what, is outstanding. If I was CQC, I would give them an award as outstanding.
All right. Care Quality Commission is what you're talking about. Ernie, be well. Goodness me, all those conditions from that. Thank you for that. Let's get on to the social media. I've probably not done enough of this. Gemma Corrigan, in the UAE, we still have school clinics and health campaigns. They check height, weight, immunisations, dental, well-being. The UK used to do this. It would be a great use of a Labour government's funds. We're also talking about mobile phone theft. We just brought you my colleague Fraser Knight's report. This comes from Stephen. I use a Sony phone and I've asked Sony why they don't make it more difficult to turn them off without unlocking. They're not interested. Is it more stolen phones leads to more replacements, leads to more profit? They should build in more security. I think that is a very fair point, Stephen, because the police often point to how the number... I mean, I appreciate it has been factored out now, but there used to be a roaring trade in stolen car radios. I must have had at least three nicked, maybe four, I can't remember. And so I know it's unknown now, but you could actually smash the window and make off with the radio. Well, that was designed out by motor manufacturers. Not really police activity. The motor manufacturers designed a different sort of radio that now sits in your car and you can't really nick it. There has to be more that the manufacturers can do. I would have thought, Stephen, you're right on that. And if we're talking about manufacturers of fairly important things...
The new all-electric Vauxhall Corsa E is here. It's time to switch it up.
That's the owner of Vauxhall now, though, resuming the sale of diesel cars in Britain as the company reels from a £19 billion write-down after its shift into electric vehicles. The switch on to electric vehicles has been switched off. We'll find out more about that after this. It's 9:30. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC. The news with Dominic Ellis.
A government minister has told Nick that he still has confidence in the Prime Minister despite his latest U-turn on postponing local elections. Ministers say 30 votes in England will now go ahead after receiving legal advice following a challenge by Reform UK. The Metropolitan Police is looking into claims that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's protection team turned a blind eye to his visits to see Jeffrey Epstein. LBC has spoken to a former senior officer who's raised concerns that some may have withheld information. Andrew has always denied any wrongdoing. And figures show the UK's unemployment rate hit a near five-year high in the final 3 months of 2025. It climbed to 5.2%, up from 5.1%. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells, some rain in the southwest of England, a high of 8 degrees.
This is LBC.
When you switch the family's unlimited plans to Vodafone, you save. So while Nan's learning to voice note,
can you hear this? Is this on?
You're saving. While your daughter's setting a new high score on her favourite game.
Get in!
You're saving. While your son's video calling his crush for 3 hours.
I love you more.
You're saving. Save more when you switch your family's plans to Vodafone. With Vodafone together. Eligible plans from the 30th of October. Credit check and terms apply.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on 2025 Amazon packaging data across the UK and EU.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead.
I can see why they're into it.
Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's talk a little bit more about phone security and this point that Stephen made. Lee supports it. The phone manufacturers could make the phones totally useless if they were stolen, but it's not in their interest to. I think, Stephen, you're onto something here. Sam says, my mobile is worn on a strap, is worn on a strap on my body. It's connected with a metal tab and metal grasp. You can get them for less than £20, I'll have to name the company, so it's Amazon, I'm sure there are others available. Total safety, just search for crossbody mobile phone lanyard. Well, okay, I mean, Sam, well done. I'm very pleased for you, Sam, sir or madam. But you shouldn't have to strap your mobile phone to yourself, should you, in reality? You should be able to take it out wherever you choose and make a phone call or use it for maps or whatever it might be. And you can't. That's the reality. I do think. But, Sam, thank you. Look after yourself. Stay safe. Obviously, if that makes you feel safe, that's good. Of course it is. We're also talking, of course, about measles. And the one part in London, Enfield. It is worth saying, as the newspaper points out, now, Enfield has one of the most diverse boroughs in London. 48% black, Asian, and other minorities. Apparently, a lot of Turkish people, a lot of Bulgarians. And these are groups that are difficult to get through to. Why? What are the concerns? When I tell you that your child, if you're living in Enfield, you want to be looking at 95% immunity. Britain got to 89 and was in a great place. If you're living in Enfield, it's at 64%. Your child could get measles, and this is not overstating, your child could die from measles. Where is the debate? It's also hugely painful, as you heard from a couple of callers, one Jane, who had it as a child, she thought she might be going blind. Ernie's still got health conditions now. What more do you need to hear? If you believed those stories, which I never did, that COVID vaccine was injecting dangerous drugs into your body, was going to kill you, but do you not want safety for your child? Lees, in Saltney Ferry. Lees, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, because when I first came over here to this country in 2002 from the United States...
I would have got that from your accent, you know. I didn't think you'd come from New Zealand.
Well, you're lucky. yeah, I had to get my full immunization records and submit them. I was 34 at the time. I managed to get them from where I went to high school.
Right.
Because... even like Kentucky,
I love
Indiana.
Your accent.
Thank you.
Where are you from?
Kentucky originally.
I could listen to you read the phone book. I just love it. Keep going, Lise.
Bless your heart. I actually managed to go over to where I went to high school, and they still had my immunization records that I was able to submit. But I had to do that before they would give me a work permit to come over here. So that's how seriously the government took this back then. And I'm curious whether that's still the case now when people get work permits.
I don't think it is, you know. Hey, what brought you from Kentucky to Saltney Ferry?
I actually was down in sort of the Buckinghamshire area originally, but I've been up here in North Wales for about 2-3 years now.
Don't you miss the green grass of Kentucky?
It's actually bluegrass in Kentucky, in all honesty, I would not want to work in America. You get too many perks working over here than what you get in America.
Oh, really? Tell me why work is better in the UK than it is in the US, Lise.
Well, in the U.S., I got a week's vacation, if I was lucky. Some people get 2 weeks vacation. You have no employment rights. Your employer could literally walk in after you've been there 50 years and say, see you later, don't want you here anymore. And as long as it wasn't for something that was like discrimination, they could do it and get away with it. So, no, people are looking
here. That's what's on your license plate, isn't it? The Bluegrass State. On your license plates on the cars, of course it's the Blue Cross. The one the license plate I love is Live Free or Die. Do you remember that one for New Hampshire?
I do remember that one.
Yeah, hey, great. Yeah. Are you going to stay in touch with me?
Yes, of course. I call you all the time.
I love that accent. I want to hear it again. You have a good day down there in Saltney Ferry. Lees, thank you for that. Talking phone theft with you, Joe, in a moment. But I want to come to this story that actually we touched on in the first hour of the show. In our regular look in the world of business and finance with Christian May. And we're coming back to it. It's the second lead on today's Daily Telegraph. The owner of Vauxhall has resumed the sale of diesel cars in Britain as the company reels from a £19 billion write-down. So are they pulling the plug on electric vehicle production? Liam Halligan is an economist, journalist and broadcaster. He wrote a piece for last weekend's Sunday Telegraph. Labour's net zero extremism is ripping the heart out of Britain, which is related to this conversation. Good to have you on, Liam. Let's start up with why have they had a £19 billion write-down? What brought that about, Liam? Morning.
Morning, Nick. Well, as you know, across the Western world and across much of the world, car makers have been pivoting, if you like, away from petrol and diesel cars and towards electric vehicles. Pure electric vehicles, not just hybrids. In the UK, there's going to be a ban on the sale of new petrol and diesel cars, believe it or not, in 2030. In the EU, that ban is 2035. And actually, just before Christmas, good time to bury bad news, as it were. The European Commission basically abandoned its 2035 targets. But, you know, virtue signalling, Britain is soldiering on pretty much solo with this insane 2030 ban, because all it's going to do, Nick, is hand our car market to countless imported Chinese-made EVs that are massively subsidised by the Chinese government. In the real world, automotive companies like Stellantis, which owns Vauxhall, which owns Peugeot, which owns Fiat, it's closing down plants focus on petrol and diesel cars. Famously, last year, tragically, after 108 years of van making in Luton, Stellantis/Vauxhall closed down that plant in Luton. It now seems that because a lot of the punters don't want these EVs, because a lot of their benefits are actually hyped up, automotive companies are going back to making diesel cars, petrol cars, because ahead of the ban in the UK, there's a huge market for them. People want these cars. They're more convenient. They got better resale value. And that's what people want to drive at this point, because the EV technology just isn't there. It's never been there. I've always thought that putting all our eggs in the EV basket was a blind alley. There are so many issues about these cars. There's so many reasons why they aren't the long-term solution.
But Liam, the market
we're all told they are.
The market is speaking here, isn't it? Because you'll probably be aware, in the past 12 months, other car makers, including Volkswagen, Ford and GM, General Motors, have written off a total of £40 billion from their balance sheets. This drive to electric vehicles, it's not chiming with the audience, is it?
It absolutely isn't, because this is what happens, Nick, when you have top-down diktats driven by virtue signalling politicians, rather than companies investing millions, tens of millions, billions of pounds in new manufacturing, you know, putting their capital on the line, employing tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people across Europe. Companies aren't being, you know, they're being forced down a certain ideological road, which is what EVs have become, rather than responding to technological change and indeed consumer demand. We now have, almost a million people work in the car industry in Britain, Nick. It's still a major employer, particularly in parts of the country, providing good jobs where there often aren't many good jobs, unfortunately. And this EV revolution risks totally destroying our car market.
Liam, I will end it there. Liam Halligan, thank you. Only for time reasons, economist, journalist and broadcaster. And as Liam rightly said, this is widespread now. I said earlier, of course, we're talking about Vauxhall or their owner Stellantis, but you look at Volkswagen, you look at Ford, you look at General Motors, a total of, let me add these figures up, goodness me, a total of just a whisker under £60 billion they've had to write off their balance sheets, with the chief executive of actually using the words Liam just did, talking about the real world, poor execution, the cost of overestimating the pace of the energy transition. And yet you listen to Ed Miliband and he still wants us all to get into our electric cars. There's just not the infrastructure, is there? We might talk about that, but Joe's in Oxford, been hanging on the line to talk about phone theft. And do you want to talk about some of the manufacturers as well, I understand? Is that right? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. Long-term listener, first-time caller,
how so
I'm a little bit nervous. Thank you very much.
Great to have you on.
Pardon me. So the first thing I'm kind of thinking is that recently I had to upgrade my phone. It ran out of contract. And I signed up the usual contract, etc. And I noticed how much the phone would have cost outright. And I think it would have cost about £1,000.
Yes,
I'm sitting there thinking, that's insane. Why is a piece of technology that in 12 months' time is going to be outdated and possibly found in a boot fair to the cost of maybe £15-20 going to cost me £1,000? And
that's
firstly, I think it really does seem like a false economy. It really, really does. And the second thing I kind of thought about was, I don't know if you're familiar with the Bluetooth technology. It kind of replaced
headphones.
My car.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
me sure. too. Headphones, car, at home.
Yeah.
I've always thought, would it be possible, and this is coming from a humble school teacher, so I don't even know if this technology is possible, whether or not a card or something could be kept on a person where after a certain range from the phone, from the device, if the range was broken, say 10 meters, the phone could lock itself, or the phone could block itself, in effect. I don't know if that even exists. This could be very pie in the sky. This could be my imagination. But something to, very much like if you use a lawnmower and you have that safety cord that you can attach onto your
belt. No, but this is possible, because I had a car that, as I approached it, if the keys were in my pocket, the door's automatically unlocked.
Yeah,
so I'm sure
something could be reverse engineered. Yeah, exactly. That's my kind of thought. You know what? It could be someone's million-pound idea, but it's not mine.
Yeah.
But I feel it's something that maybe could happen, a deterrent for someone to steal the phone.
Well, I know.
I don't feel there's
do.
Enough deterrence. You know?
I'm going to copyright this idea. I shall call it Joe's phone safety device. And when I sell it for a couple of $1 billion, I will remember you, Joe. And I'll send you a nice box of chocolates.
Find an Oxford at some stage. That'll be nice.
That'll do it. You got it, Joe. Be well. That's a tremendous idea, because as Joe says, it is the reverse of if you have a car of a certain level. You spend a few quid, you're fortunate enough to lease it for a few quid or whatever. As you walk towards it, the door's automatically unlocked because it senses the pocket in your key, or even the key in your pocket. There, we might be onto something. Thanks for that. We'll continue to talk measles. Georgia, I was admitted to hospital in northwest London on Sunday as I contracted a virus from my son, and I'm 7 months pregnant, and I felt really unwell. In the cubicle next door was a woman 32 weeks pregnant who'd contracted measles from her son and had been admitted himself. Her measles had developed into meningitis. She had to be induced early. This comes in from Sarah in Hackney. I send my daughter to a nursery in Haringey. She was born prematurely at 30 weeks and was very vulnerable. The MMRV can only be given after 12 months of age. She caught measles when she was 8 and very tiny. She obviously got it from other children at the nursery. Thank goodness after a few days she was okay. But I think all children who are not vaccinated should not be allowed into school. It's unfair to other vulnerable children. We'll continue that conversation as well as phone thefts after the 9:45 LBC News headlines read by Dominic Ellis.
Local election staff in England are warning they face an uphill battle to be ready for voting in May following a major government U-turn. The US civil rights activist Jesse Jackson has died at the age of 84. And figures show the UK's unemployment rate hit a near five-year high in the final 3 months of 2025. LBC weather mostly dry with sunny spells, some rain in the southwest of England, a high of 8 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M4 remains closed westbound between junctions 10 at the A329M and junction 11 at Reading at the A33. It was because of an accident and the emergency repair works are taking place. Severe delays on the approach and on the surrounding routes. Then on the western stretch of the M25, there are long delays clockwise from before junction 16 at the M40 up towards 19 at Watford. There's been two separate accidents on that stretch. Woolwich High Street's had to be closed eastbound because of an accident. And in Chiswick, the Great Chertsey Road, the A316 is closed in both directions following an accident. On the underground, there are severe delays on the Bakerloo line and minor delays on the Central and Piccadilly lines.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
I'm going to ask you a question about the Labour government this morning, and I am 100% certain it's not a question you're expecting. Oh, and measles is back. I think we know why, don't we?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Big motoring world are big on value. But what does that mean for you? Well, we price check our cars every day so we can give you the best price. Guaranteed. In fact, 95% of our cars are priced below market value. Big motoring world, we're big on value. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
A Southern train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear "all change, please," you'll know you already have. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
You can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
With a Little Plus Bakery Spin, you can get a free bakery coupon every time you shop. Just scan Little Plus at the checkout, spin, win, and enjoy a free bakery item. Mmm. Little. More to value. One spin per customer per day, subject to availability. Ends 25th of Feb. 18 plus GB only. T's and C's apply. See little.co.uk/LPTV.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan. Gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. No medical questions and a cash payout. Search Sunlight Cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payout. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
Radio turns miles into memories. From sing-alongs with the family, road tripping with your friends, or continuing that conversation right into work. In-car entertainment is getting better and better, allowing you to create more memories than ever before. So make sure your next car suits all your radio needs.
It took me less than 30 seconds to request my repeat prescription on the NHS app.
That's quicker than making this brew.
And I save time by not ringing the GP practice.
When?
Plus, with notifications turned on, I know as soon as I get a new message.
Big win.
So there's more time for this tea break.
So did you go to that restaurant?
It was so good.
We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Request repeat prescriptions and turn on notifications to never miss a message. Tap the NHS app.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Coming to you, Simon, for a call on phone theft in just a moment. Let's expand on something you heard on the LBC News Bulletin with the news that the Reverend Jesse Jackson has died aged 84. He's, of course, one of the last remaining links, really, with the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., because he campaigned with him many decades ago. The cause of death, I say again, he's 84. The cause of death is not given, his family reporting that he died peacefully surrounded by his loved ones. He had been admitted to hospital at the end of last year. He's lived for more than a decade with something called progressive supranuclear palsy, or palsy, PSP. This affects patients' ability to walk and swallow and can lead to dangerous complications. He was a huge figure in the world of US politics. He had, as I said earlier, he was a two-time presidential candidate in 1984 and 1988. And the 88 campaign resulted in the launch of his National Rainbow Coalition to oppose Ronald Reagan's policies and advocate for social programs. So a well-known campaign. He did well in 4 years in the 88 campaign. He won 11 primaries and caucuses. So his message certainly got across. So the veteran campaigner, age 84, after suffering for more than 12 months with something called PSP. I'm sure some of my colleagues will give you more details and probably more in our news bulletins as well. OK, let's pick up on phone theft and Simon in Finchley. Simon, you've worked in this area, is that right? Good morning.
Yes, I used to work for both Motorola and Sony Ericsson making phones.
OK.
I've run mobile phone networks. I'm on the standard bodies for both
devices, okay.
Handsets and security.
What's the real market price for a mobile phone?
It probably is something like £1,000.
Oh, it really genuinely is? Okay. Wow.
I bristled at that comment. Oh, it's £1,000. I watch lots of teardowns on YouTube.
Right.
And the technology in a phone is incredible.
Yes.
I can't understand why somebody pays £100 for a pair of shoes, but I look at what's inside a phone and it is incredible.
But it must break your heart. As they rightly said, then they get traded for, I don't know, £100 in a Sunday market or something like that.
But that's because technology moves on. That's impressive too. Actually, I'm really disappointed at how little technology is moving on now.
Okay.
I used to edit What Mobile magazine.
Oh, right,
and,
okay.
And every month we'd see significant improvement in phones.
Every month?
Yes. Oh, wow. But that was in the 90s and early 2000s.
Yes.
And now each phone, the improvement is incremental, and it's really disappointing.
Why? Why have they stopped inventing, for want of a better word?
I don't understand. You look at what Apple's done with the Vision Pro, which is a fabulous, innovative product.
Hang on, what have Apple done with the Vision Pro?
So the Vision Pro is their headset, virtual reality headset.
That does
all sorts of incredible things with eye tracking, with windows within windows. It can have a software window that you see in the screen, and it's casting a shadow on a real object, making the shadow fit round the object. They do incredibly clever things in that.
Right.
And why aren't they putting the same level of attention? So why don't phones have good temperature sensors? Why don't they have pollution sensors? If you read the electronics press and see how many sensors are out there, and they're just not going into phones.
What about my mate Joe's idea that you have some kind of device on your body that if you are separated from your mobile phone for more than 100 yards or something, an alarm sounds or it switches off?
That device could be your earbuds. You don't need a new device.
That device could be my earbuds, right.
So you've got earbuds anyway.
Right.
So you don't need anything new. Yes, it's a brilliant idea.
So why aren't they doing it? I know you can't answer that. You're a journalist and you're the former editor of What Mobile Phone. But this speaks to your fact that they're not really advancing, perhaps, in the right area or fast enough. Is that fair to say?
It might be because it would be inconvenient if you leave the phone somewhere and it gets locked as you walk around.
But you'd have the code, wouldn't you?
Yes,
so if your code is 1234, and gosh, how many times do I do this? I come downstairs and I've left the damn thing in the bedroom. Right,
it's
going to switch off, but once I put in 1234, we're back on the road, aren't we?
It's fine. And I would want to do some checking, make sure that no one isn't already doing that.
All right.
But my point on phone theft is with coordination, it could be stamped out completely.
Go on, what does that mean?
So I listened to your report.
Yes.
And they were tracking the wrong phone. They were tracking the stolen phone. They should have been tracking the thieves' phone. When you've got a stolen phone...
How would they know the number? Sorry.
Because so every phone has three unique numbers. It's got the...
Oh, that's right.
It's got its serial number, which is called an IMEI. There's a serial number on the SIM card, which is called an IMSI.
Oh, my God.
And there's its Wi-Fi number, which is its MAC address.
Right.
and it's transmitting all of these all the time.
Right.
So as the stolen phone is moving around London, so is the thief's phone, and it's making the same movements. So if the police had hooks into the mobile network, it could see where the stolen phone was going.
Yeah.
And then you track the thief's phone. You don't track the phone that's going to get
switched
off.
How do you know the thief's NMI... Sorry, how do you know that?
Because you can see which other phones along the network are going round the network.
What, physically? It's that close. So if it's in his trouser pocket, he's going to ping the other number up.
Well, so every phone is always attached to a mobile phone cell. That's how it makes its call.
Yeah.
You can see... So if I'm at outside Angel Station...
Yeah.
..and I start going down towards Old Street...
Yeah.
My phone will jump from cell to cell to cell.
Okay.
So the stolen phone is jumping from cell to cell to cell.
I get it.
But the thief's phone is doing the same journey, jumping from cell to cell to cell.
So they need to get on that.
Now it might be doing it on a different network. One might be on Vodafone and one might be on EE.
Yeah.
But if you have coordination between all the networks...
Yes.
...then you can see these two phones doing the same journey.
I see what you're saying.
You can also start seeing a pattern of... Here's a phone that always seems to be around when a phone gets stolen. So you don't just look at that one incident. You look at a pattern of incidents.
I see. Yeah, you go after the thief rather than the stolen phone. Simon, so much technology to discuss. I will leave it there because I must get some others on, but you've been hugely helpful and beneficial to my business idea, which I'm setting up with my mate Joe. Hopefully I'll be in the shop by, I don't know, next Tuesday. Thanks, Simon. Norman in Hanwell, you've got about a minute. Go ahead, sir. The point you want to make about phone theft. Good morning.
It's only pertaining to iPhones, but even when the phone's locked, people can swipe down or up and get to the control center and set the phone in airplane mode, and that cuts off all communication to the phone.
What, they don't need the code to do that? Sorry, is that what you're saying?
Well, the thing is, there's a simple setting in the iPhone that can switch that off, so that when the phone's locked, it's locked.
Yeah.
There's no way to switch it off. There's no way to put it in airplane mode.
Right.
You can only do it once you've opened the phone.
Right. Okay.
And it's just in settings. There's something called Face and ID.
Yes, and I've got that. Yes. Yeah.
Face ID and passcode.
Yeah.
Scroll down to allow access when locked and toggle it off.
Done. And I'm afraid I've got to toggle off because I'm nearly out of time. But thank you, Norman, for that. So much information coming in on this. Here's Amanda. My Apple Watch tells me if I've left my iPhone at home. Same here. Charles says exactly the same, my Apple Watch. So, yes, there is something perhaps to that business idea that we can put forward. But that has brought us full circle to the end of another day. Sorry, I can't take any more calls on that now. If you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's me for today. James O'Brien, the other side of the news on LBC. I'm back with you, God willing, tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and I sometimes worry about the ideas that pop into my head as I'm making my way downstairs to the studio, because obviously with the luxury of 2 minutes thought, they may emerge or be established as completely ridiculous. We'll probably talk about measles later, but I did find myself wondering a moment ago whether or not the answer to the question of why measles is back is the same as the conversation that we had about racism last week. Is it the same reason? Is measles back for the same reasons that racism is back in fashion, as being demonstrated by various politicians? But we are beginning with a politics question of a very different flavour. In fact, I'm willing to wager that you can't guess the question I'm about to ask you for all the tea in China.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, local election staff are warning they face an uphill battle to be ready for voting in May following a government U-turn. Plans to delay polling day in 30 areas of England have been abandoned after ministers received new advice. Reform UK had sought legal action over the move and now want ministers to publish the new guidance. Care Minister Stephen Kinnock has admitted to LBC the change is not a good look for the government.
I accept that things have to change. We've had some very big changes in number 10, which I'm sure you will have followed in recent days and weeks. It means now really getting back to core Labour values of building an economy that works for everyone. That is what we're going to see with this government going forward. Sometimes things change.
In the past half an hour, the civil rights icon Reverend Jesse Jackson has died at the age of 84. In a statement, his family say he was a leader to the oppressed, the voiceless and the overlooked around the world. He rose to prominence alongside Martin Luther King Jr. and ran for the Democratic presidential nominee twice in the 1980s. Scotland Yard has told LBC that it's looking into claims that protection officers assigned to Andrew Mountbatten Windsor turned a blind eye to his visits to see Jeffrey Epstein. LBC has spoken to a former senior officer who have raised concerns that some may have withheld information from the Metropolitan Police. Spencer Coovin is a lawyer who represented nine of Epstein's survivors.
If the police were going to be doing their job correctly, they should be finding the protection officers that were assigned to Andrew, and interviewing them. So instead of just asking people to step forward, why not go out and actually interview the people you know are there?
There's no suggestion of any criminality by Andrew during his visits to Jeffrey Epstein's island. The former prince has always strongly denied any wrongdoing. The head of the Metropolitan Police says the courts need to stop releasing repeat offender mobile phone thieves. Sir Mark Rowley is also calling on manufacturers and telecom companies to make it harder for criminals to resell stolen devices. Sir Mark's comments come as the force reports a drop in the number of recorded phone thefts in London. And figures show the UK's unemployment rate hit a near five-year high in the final 3 months of 2025. It climbed to 5.2%, up from 5.1%. Wage growth across the country also slowed in the same period. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 were trading up 52 at 10,522. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells, some rain in the southwest of England. Later, a high of 8 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after ten. A very good morning indeed to you. This is going to take you by surprise, but it actually shouldn't. This is one of the maddest things about living in this country at this time. Who's in charge of the national story? Oh, that's quite a good question, actually. Who's in charge of the national story? It's a bit lazy, but it's not without merits to bookmakers to talk about politics. I don't think we've ever done it, but it's you can see why people do. Here's a bookmaker to talk about how the markets are moving. If you were a Tory shill or a sort of Nigel Farage toe tickler, you probably wouldn't be talking to any bookmakers today, even if you did it on a regular basis when the news suited your political agenda, because something extraordinary happened in the markets yesterday. For the first time in a long time, the Labour Party, the Labour government, moved ahead. The margins are small, but they are now the favourites, with Ladbrokes and others, to win the most seats at the next general election. I just want to let that percolate for a moment, and I'd like you to wonder why you didn't know that already. Don't text me to tell me that you did, all right? There's only room for one massive show-off on this programme, and I've already started. Why do you think you didn't know that? I mean, it's not even a rhetorical question. Why do you think you didn't know that yesterday the Labour Party, which could not really have had a worse start to 2026, moved into the favourites position in most betting markets with regard to the question of which party is going to win the most seats at the next general election? Now, listen, the calculus is not such that that delivers an overall majority. Things are still very complex. And I'm increasingly having to remind myself that we're still years out from a general election. I think there are probably some members of the cabinet who would do well to remind themselves that we're still years out from a general election. But the reason I began the programme this morning by asking you who writes the national story was because it seems to me that if it was being written fairly or honestly, you would know that. You would know that you live in a country where the arguably the most reliable gauge of where public opinion lies has currently got the Labour Party at the forefront of the race to win the most seats at the next general election. That's nuts, right? Is it nuts that you didn't know that, or that it is not being more widely reported, or is it just nuts that it's happening? Because that's a question you can only answer through the lens of reflecting upon who writes our national story. It's so completely at odds with the prevailing winds on most media, whether social or legacy. And today is a terrible day, another terrible day for the government. They abandoned a High Court action to postpone, or rather to allow councils to postpone elections on the, I mean, outwardly very reasonable grounds that by the time next year comes around, many of the councils to which elections are being held will no longer exist in the form that they would be voted for. But of course, politics isn't about reason or rationality or proper explanations. Politics is about moods and movements. And so portraying Keir Starmer as wanting to abandon elections because he was worried about losing them, when in fact it was councils who wanted to postpone them because they were cognizant of the fact that they wouldn't exist in their current form in a year or two's time, they should have seen that coming from 100 miles away. Once again, bad politics. And also, as I think with the Palestine Action Ban, decent lawyers, and they have many decent lawyers, would almost certainly have told them, I think, ironically, and again, something else you probably haven't reflected upon yet in the news, as you hear people celebrating or bemoaning or possibly in a very dull fashion, as I've just done, explaining the story about council election postponements, you probably haven't heard anybody thanking the Lord for the European Convention on Human Rights, under whose auspices, I think, and I've taken advice on this, the fact that they were set to lose in the High Court almost certainly depended. So you have Farage doing a lap of honour over this without mentioning two things. Number one, the bravest man he's ever met continues to lie egregiously on a intergalactic spectacular scale about the results of the US presidential election in 2020. The bravest man Nigel Farage has ever met despises democracy and lies about it daily. And the mooted or the imminent loss in the High Court of the attempts to postpone the elections is almost certainly, but not certainly, so, you know, don't stick this one on the ledger, but almost certainly down to advice taken that would have encompassed the European Convention on Human Rights, which, of course, is a supranational institution that protects populations from governments that are in danger of or accused of eroding democracy. Two more things that you won't hear mentioned in the coverage, much of the coverage of this story today. It's also a very bad week for the Labour Party because of the investigation that Keir Starmer has announced into reports